That's the thing. People love their violence and their rape if it's in the box that says,
take that quote out of context right now.
Focus on here is that this person at least is claiming that we are still hurt and are prejudiced against Japanese because of what happened on and Pearl Harbor, and that we've done a good job of not forgetting that.
So what I would like very much
to lore over that,
like, and I'm not even necessarily joking, is the next time I arrest somebody, I'm gonna try to get it so that someone takes a picture of me with the person I'm arresting, and hopefully it'll be a white person, and this is Madison, so it probably will be. So, and then I'll be like smiling at the camera, and I want you to send a picture of that to your friend, and just be like, oh, yep, arresting your white people. Sorry about it.
Here it is. Okay, so I'm not gonna include their name, because I don't want you to.
Oh, what you think? What do you think I'm gonna do?
I mean, I don't know. It's just that's not very inappropriate.
We're gonna post it onto Twitter and get the army to attack her.
Oh wait, I forgot this is a podcast and not just us talking.
All right, so here's the picture.
Why isn't it showing? Oh, that's Richard's fan art. Hang on.
It's the one.
77 years after Pearl Harbor, it still hurts. But 19 years after 9/11, we are importing them in. And they're writing wait a minute, importing them?
Right.
But are we loading them on cargo boats? And
right, it's exactly what we're doing.
We're an export. We're an importer-exporter.
Yeah. We are major importers of Muslims. But the more important point here is that we are not major importers of Japanese, and that the Japanese have no influence in our country.
Oh, none at all.
I don't understand why they think that Pearl Harbor still hurts.
Because they're 90 and they're not that old, but they're living in the past.
That's senile.
They're living in the past.
Not a World War II vets.
Right. I don't think her or her husband were alive in World War II. Or if they were, they were very, very young.
I would say they probably did not participate, at least.
Well, I mean, if you're inbred and have like three legs or 11 thumbs or some bullshit, you're probably medically disqualified.
If you do have three legs, does that give you an advantage at the church activities for the three-legged race?
Look at Richard! Richard's swinging for the fences already!
Oh man, that was great. That's high quality right there.
That was a quality joke, Richard.
Thank you.
But yeah, so I better not hear about you arresting the whitey. Ian, really need you to
arrest.
That.
I arrest a lot of whitey.
Is that profiling?
Because I'm like, hey, that every white person I arrest, I whisper in their ear, I'm like, 77 years and I'm still getting you.
Speaking of whitey, this is another good segue, okay? So I was reading this article this morning on Reddit when I was sipping my coffee about shipwrecks in submarines and stuff, and states of decay of both the submarine itself and the bodies that would be within it at the bottom of the ocean. And in the comments section of the article, it was discussing shipwrecks within the Great Lakes, because how cold the Great Lakes are, they decay at different rates and everything like that. Well, so apparently in Lake Michigan, or maybe it's Lake Superior, I don't know, one of them, there's a shipwreck that's fairly shallow but is ridiculously cold. And so there's like this guy that is like perfectly preserved, and he just like floats around the shipwreck, and his name is Old Whitey. And like if you dive down to it, it's a difficult dive apparently, but if you dive down to it, then you get like go and search the wreckage, this like corpse of this guy named Old Whitey will like follow you around in the currents.
Wow, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put that on my to don't list.
And yet, strangely comforting too. It's nice to that you're not alone.
What?
Strangely comforting.
Yeah, you know, you're not alone down there. You know, you got old lady keeping an eye out for you. He's got your back.
Oh man, we're dialing it up to 11 today.
Whitey's always got your back. If we've learned one thing from Mississippi today, it's that Whitey's always got your back.
Yeah, well, you know, he might have cut off your back to get your back, but he's got it.
All right, guys, welcome everyone to another exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I'm your host and producer, Richard Martindale, and with me today, as always, is my co-host, Patrick Weaver.
Hello.
And Ian Shaw.
Hi. Oh, wow, you mentioned producer today. Usually you just say host. You're
I don't like to let people know that I'm the one who causes these edits.
You need to do writer, producer, editor, director, and just, you know, list it all.
Yeah, sure.
Full responsibility. He even mimics our voices. We're not really here.
The problem is that when these things go off the rails or like the quality is echoing or something, I'm like, oh man, I don't want credit for that.
That's the best part of me leaving the Overtime Network is I can just spew whatever the fuck I want on these podcasts and Joey has no power over me.
Richard, quick question for you.
Yeah, yeah.
How many, do you know how many episodes we're up to?
Around 42. Ooh,
that's a good question. Whoa!
And how long ago was episode one?
Like a year ago, I think?
No, it has to be longer than that. There's no way we did 42 episodes in a year, Richard.
Yeah, that's like almost once a week.
Yeah, you've got a point. You got a point, guys. It might have been 20.
It's got to be at least 3 years, right?
I'd say three.
Three? Okay, are you lumping in the waiver trolls part as well?
Just go back to episode one and tell me when that was.
Let's see. Let's just say that our own website is not the most intuitive in terms of archives. So, let's just...
2 minutes in, we're already shitting all over our content creation.
Yeah, you know, it's... what year is it? pulls collar out for... it looks like it's... I think it is 2018, though. So February 6, 2018 was our first episode.
Wow. I would not have expected that.
Well, that's almost 2 years. That's almost 2 years. So, okay, so in 2 years, I'm just going to round up for brevity's sake, in 42 episodes, we have yet to receive a single email from anybody.
Yeah, I know.
So... If you're listening,
I have not actually promoted this either. To be fair,
we're promoting it now.
That was Joey's job.
So if you're listening to this, please send us an email. We don't care what it's about. Richard and I have already talked about this before this podcast started recording. We are going to dedicate an entire episode to you and your beloved email that is going to be sent to us.
Wow, that'll be the easiest episode to schedule.
Oh, hells yeah.
It'll be 30 seconds long.
Well, there you go.
Whoa. Well, maybe.
You'll
introduce us, we'll say we have no email, and then we'll go.
No, wow. I'll introduce us, we'll do our little beginning banter. So, you know, that's about 2 minutes right there. And then the email will be a yes or no question. We'll say no, and then close out and then leave.
There you go. See? But we would have received an email, and that is what is important. And what is the email address, Richard?
The email address is theleagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org.
All right. All you listeners out there, we've put this at the beginning this time, not 2.5 hours in where you're not listening anymore. So,
I know. It's all, yeah, it is in the, it's also in the description thing as well, for people to check out.
Nobody has time for that.
Well, okay. And it does require reading.
All right. Cool. Yeah,
so, League of Mediocre Gentlemen at otnmedia.org.
All right. I've done my part. You guys have fun talking about whatever the fuck you guys are on the schedule.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, you guys just want to dive in. It's the season of, like, things being released.
It is a great season to be a lazy fuck consumer of media.
Oh my god. gosh, yeah.
How many F words do we get an episode?
Unlimited.
Joey doesn't listen to this, so we get as many as we want.
I just check off the box explicit, and then we're good to go.
People well, know already
well is it that cunting fantastic?
Oh, man. Okay, Boomer. Anyway. So
apparently that's as bad as the
Nationals won the
now.
World Series, huh?
That was the weirdest one. So Nationals won. That was the end of the World Series. Game 7, guys.
I didn't watch any of it. I'm sorry.
I watched a couple games. It was a weird one.
Yeah, I didn't start watching until Game 5, I think, because I thought that the Nats would get eliminated at a certain point. So I was like, oh, I guess I should probably start watching this.
All right, moving right along.
Yeah, all right. Good times. Congratulations, Nationals. Congratulations, James.
James.
I don't want to.
Is this going
to
make him more or less annoying now?
More, because he has a superpower. Any team that he starts rooting for wins a World Series and then he moves on.
I don't know. Pirates World Series.
Yeah, the Pirates one didn't work out. Redacted.
Redacted. So, do you think that the Chargers are going to move to London, Ian?
I think it's just an empty threat, but I do think there will be a London team sometime in the next 20 years or so, but I feel like that's just blowing smoke, so.
Who would have predicted a couple years ago that, four teams moving to LA all at the same time would cause total attendance to these teams to drop to almost
nothing? Oh, no, it's shocking, right?
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Stupid Chargers.
Oh, it's just not a good football town to begin with, so.
I think they turn out for the Rams.
Yeah, it's just not really good for two teams, I feel.
Right. But. Well, you see that in basketball, too, because with the Clippers and the Staples Center.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a Lakers town, and always will be.
It's kind of rare. I would say it's probably more likely that two sports cities end up favoring one over the other than you get the equal split. It's pretty uncommon, I'd say, to get the equal split of attention. Even your really famous ones like Cubs, White Sox. I mean, Chicago's a Cubs town first, so.
Right, but so I was actually going to bring that up because this might just be East Coast biased, but I feel that despite it being a Cubs town first, there is still a really nice, dedicated, hardcore fan base for the White Sox. Same way
there is, but I feel that and maybe this has to do with casual fans more than anything. So there are hardcore Cubs fans, there are hardcore White Sox fans, but if you are a casual fan of baseball in Chicago, you pretty much root for the Cubs, just like in New York. If you're a casual baseball fan, you are root for the Yankees, and just, you know, on and on down the list.
Well, the point is that I don't really feel like there's a huge base of casual Clippers fans.
No,
of hardcore Clippers.
Of hardcore Clipper fans. Yeah. Well, it's because there's not hardcore much.
Huge base of any fans for the Clippers, based on the agreement for both those statements.
Well, that's the problem because like the Clippers are so good this year. Like Kawhi Leonard went there, Paul George is there. Like they very well are going to be neck and neck with the Lakers and LeBron in the West. It's going to be a really good stride to the finish. But
maybe that's the thing that fights against their best interests, because no one really rooted for Golden State before they suddenly became dynastic. But the bonus was that the Lakers sucked when Golden State started to get good. So there was a power vacuum over there. But now that Golden State is good, the Lakers are good, or at least they have LeBron, so there's a tension there. The fans of those teams aren't going to just jump ship and root for the Clippers. Unlike when Golden State got good, pretty much everyone was like, well, my team's shit. I guess I'll root for Golden State.
Right. Okay. Fair. Stop talking about sports.
Do you guys think that they turn out for Rams games because they thought it was for Dodge trucks?
No.
I think you're confusing this with moving right along area.
I do think that the Phillies are going to sign Abreu. and then they're going to miss the playoffs again?
I would be very surprised if they signed Abreu. Abreu's a free agent? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Abreu and Rendon.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't even know Abreu was a free agent. He's getting kind of old. I don't think that that's a good idea.
He is not
getting old.
Well, think about it. He was like 28 when he came over from Cuba. He's got to be in his early 30s now.
Oh, you think like the Albert Pujols thing?
Well, I mean, he's a first baseman.
He is 32 years old.
There you go. 32-year-old power-hitting first baseman. No, thank you.
That's perfect for the Phillies. Are you kidding me? Ron Howard 2.0.
No.
Ron Howard. He said Ron Howard.
Shit. Yeah, same initials.
Where is he going to play? As
Ryan Howard.
As disgusted as I am with Reese Hoskins, where are you going to – you're not going to move Hoskins off of first. Can't play defense outfield. Anywhere else. No, we tried that before.
No, there's going to be a coup led by the Phillies. They're going to get the DH.
Oh, finally.
We'll see what happens. I have no idea what the front office is going to do. We'll see what happens. Maybe I think it's more likely that the Nationals will hold on to Rendon than Strasburg, but maybe I'm crazy there.
Speaking of Philadelphia, how are the Eagles doing?
They are tied with the Cowboys for first in the division of two teams that don't really deserve to make the playoffs. But it's pretty much both of them shooting themselves in the foot over and over again. At least the Eagles have won their last two games. So,
and then my final football question. Do you feel that the Packers or the Vikings have a more palatable fan base?
I don't know many Vikings fans. So in Madison area, people are pretty much Packers or there are some Bears fans. So okay. I don't really know much about Viking fans other than what I see on TV. So can't really comment on that.
Okay. Very well.
All right, sounds like this is the end of our obligatory sports commentary.
Yep, let's move on to the more interesting stuff.
All right, cool. All right, you want to jump into games, guys, or do you want to go into our TV shows? Everything sort of came out all at once. So there's no real timeline to do one.
Let's do games first.
All right, cool. All right, so
with the understanding that nobody is going to spend a 10-minute monologue about any of their games.
That's fair.
I'll do my best.
I feel like Octopath Traveler is going to take most of our second hour.
Jesus.
No, how about this? I'll start with that. Get that out of the way. It'll be short.
Oh, okay. Cool. I can go make coffee.
Pat, how far have you gotten into Octopath Traveler?
Not far. I got done with the university professor storyline.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I'm like halfway through the cleric.
Okay. I've gotten all 8, and I did the second chapter of the merchant story, and now I'm trying to do like somebody else. I'm trying to do 2 other chapter things, but that's where I'm at.
Okay, cool. I'm not saying I don't like it. I actually do like it a lot. It's just it's one of those games for me that requires a little bit of foresight to have time to sit down to get into it. And do it, and I don't make that time.
I understand. I think it honestly breaks itself up pretty well that you can kind of grab a piece here and there because of how, like, oh, there's a save point. I'll hit that real quick. And then you sort of sit down for a second. You're like, you know what? This is a good place to stop for today.
right.
But, no, I am enjoying it for the most part. I think each individual story has been really fun. My only, like, the flaws are starting to show themselves, though, like, in the game. Because I am super disappointed with how little party banter there is in here. Mm-hmm. Because the game was built to be, like, there's no major arcing story. There's nothing that, like, these all go after. But that made me think, like, okay, so it's about the characters. So obviously you would have character moments. And you do, but, like, not in between the party. And you'll have... The closest they get is, like, a little button you press after certain cutscenes. And if you happen to have the member in your party. So, if you don't have them there, you're kind of out of luck. And you have to run to the bar or the pub to pick them up and come back to the area to do it. And it's sort of not well implemented. So, little disappointed with that so far. It hasn't ruined the game for me, but it's just sort of like, come on, guys. Like, it was like Chrono Trigger could do this better, and it came out like 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the overall complaint against the game is that. And do you think the sourcing on that is because they tried to go in too many different directions, which is kind of a funny question, right? Because that's what the whole point of the game is about. But that just that many narratives together just doesn't really work to provide that kind of depth of banter, story, interaction.
Maybe a little bit, but I think that there's really not much. Like in 2019, with a company as big as Square Enix kind of fitting the bill, I don't really see that as an excuse anymore, because like you've got other games that can like easily have your characters respond to the story beats that are going on, even if they're not like in Mass Effect. I don't want to compare it to Mass Effect 100%, but like your party members don't like add to the story per se in the actual plot, but they do flavor it up a little bit by offering their opinion of what's happening at the moment. And I don't see.
Oh shit! Did we move on to the Outer Worlds? I assumed you guys would take longer on Octopath.
No, we're still talking
about Octopath.
Oh wow! I thought Richard.
This is going to be a great segue to Outer Worlds. But like, yeah, it's like I'm not asking for them to like have like if I'm doing a Tressa story, I'm not looking for Primrose to like be a major focal point in forwarding the plot. I'm just looking for her to be like, hey, you can't talk to my friend like that and get away with it or something. Like,
right.
Like, I'm just, like, I don't see how they couldn't do that. It's just odd.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's my one issue with it. It's not, again, it's nothing too major. But the other one is, so if you don't have characters in your party, they don't get a lick of experience points. Mm-hmm. So when it's time to go do their second chapter, they are horrifically underleveled, and there's a moment where now, like, I didn't mind the grinding before because it was, like, here and there. But now to up them to that level takes, like, such a major amount of time sink, and if you want to go see their stories continue. So,
right.
Bit of a disappointment on that.
Yeah, I'm not that far to experience that, but I think that might be a little bit of a deal breaker for me.
It's going to be, I think, basically what's going to end up happening, and I can see it happening already, is I'm going to pick my four party members, and then I'm going to do their stories, and then I'll just start a new game and do the others, because I don't want to have to, like, waste time grinding through it just for sake of grinding.
Cool. All right, that's a good segue into Outer Worlds, I think.
Yeah, let's talk Outer Worlds, Ian, since... Pat, have you gotten this game yet?
No, but I'm just trying to move us forward.
Okay, so... Yeah, I'm just curious, though, because I know that me and Ian have gotten this. I didn't know if you had snuck and purchased it when we weren't looking.
No, and honestly, I feel like I'm not going to be able to get to it in any reasonable amount of time, so feel free to spoiler away.
Okay, so I'm not that far into it, so I don't know how far Ian is. But
it's kind of hard to judge based on main story because I've been doing a lot of the side stuff, but... and also because the story kind of meanders a little bit.
I have left Edgewater. That's where I'm at.
I have left Edgewater a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm further along than you, I'm pretty sure.
Most definitely. Yes, this is a game that, unlike Octopath Traveler, does have good character interactions. The most famous of them that everyone is okay with spoiling online is obviously the diverging power moment in Edgewater, where your character is just like, whoa, 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 hang on a second. Like... I know this seems bad, but our town is... This would kill us.
Before we get into this, for anyone that doesn't know anything about this game, it's an RPG in the same vein as Fallout or kind of Mass Effect with the touch of Borderlands.
Yep.
So first person, you're the silent protagonist with the dialogue trees and all that sort of stuff that we've seen before, but in space! So, yes. All right, there you go, Richard. Context laid. Go.
Cool. All right. I've enjoyed these little moments. I think the side characters make the game a lot better for me, because in the beginning I was kind of bored with it. Like, how do you feel about being a silent protagonist, Ian?
I usually don't like it because it sometimes I have trouble suspending my disbelief when you're whoever you're talking to like has these long rambling sentences and things like that, and you just click a poorly written dialogue box and that somebody didn't put a whole lot of work into, and then you listen to the other person talk for a good minute. But I would say that the dialogue tree options in this are more thought out and more expressive and interesting, so that it's almost like reading a book where I have a voice in my head for my character now, where sometimes, particularly in Fallout 4, I felt this, where the dialogue trees were so lazy, I felt, that they pretty much was just like, here's good choice, neutral choice, bad choice, with no context. The flavor text was really bad. So I don't know if you get that feeling, but...
Well, I never played any of the Fallouts, unfortunately, so I can't compare it to them. But I have played all the Knights of the Old Republics, and I played the Mass Effect games, which are the two, like, silent protagonists or not silent protagonists. And Dragon Age Origins, which had a silent protagonist. It's just a little weird to have, like, so great of graphics and stuff, and then have a totally mute person. And that's not super bad. It's just, it's an odd adjustment. The thing that I don't like is, like, say you have a person who's like, oh, I'm gonna sit down and watch so-and-so play this game while I do some stuff over here. Like, it sounds super one-sided because you don't hear the protagonist at all, and it's just sort of an awkward, like, way of doing it, I guess. I don't know.
Yep. So I would say, do you want to give your impressions or what?
Yeah, here, I'll do mine quick. This is Borderlands. Like, this is how I thought a fresh Borderlands would be. I'm almost tempted to say this is what I thought Destiny was going to be like the first Destiny when it was advertised. I mean, there's no MMO or co-op, unfortunately, but, like, that, this is, like, the mixture of all of them combined, where it's, like, there, here is the shooting, here is then the first-person aspect, here is Mass Effect, like, characters and dialogue options, and here is Borderlands' extremely goofy, like, sense of humor. But, like, the humor feels a little bit tighter than Borderlands. Like, sometimes Borderlands just goes a little nuts, and apparent from all accounts, the third one is just, like, a lot of really badly aged jokes. But this one feels like they've created their own world, and then they started, like, making fun of it at the same time. It's really refreshing. The final thing I'll say is, in the very beginning, I was not very good at the combat.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I'm glad that I'm not the only one.
I was so, like, and they were super stingy with giving me any ammo besides the stupid fucking pistol gun. And I was just not good with that pistol. Now they're giving me, like, energy ammo out the wazoo, and I can't tell you how fun it is to disintegrate everyone, but, like...
And they also don't... I'm glad that I'm not the only one that had that problem, because... There was one level within the first 2 hours or so where I died probably like 10 times because I was like, there's all these enemies and their rounds are cutting through me like butter and there's no dodge rolling or anything. So you move very awkwardly.
And the slowdown timer thing just doesn't last long enough to
when the only gun I had at that point was the pistol, which is hard to aim at any distance. So I was like, man, the combat in this is really unfun. But then I figured out, oh, wait. It's a rock, paper, scissors combat system where the different types, there's like four different types of ammo, and each one has strengths and weaknesses against certain opponents. So
I didn't realize that. I just assumed that my pistols was awful.
No, it's if you're fighting against mechanized opponents like robots, you want shock ammo. That's good against that. If you're fighting against flesh, you want plasma. If you're fighting against armored opponents, you want the corrosive. And then your regular bullets are fine against most things, except I think they do poorly against robots. So,
yes, they do. Unless you're hitting their one little weak point in the middle chest area.
And then plasma doesn't do very well against, I think, manticores or whatever they're called. But
So far I've used plasma on everything. Not really.
It's generally good against fleshy things, except
It killed robots too for me. So I was like, okay, well, I guess this is the gun to use for the rest of the game.
It will kill robots, but it's not as good. Like, shock ammo is really good against robots. So once you know the rock, paper, scissors for it, you fill out your loadout with different guns and stuff like that, and you can use mods to change the ammo type that one gun has. So I have a rifle Kind of like a scout sniper. It's like a mid-range sniper kind of that I really enjoy shooting. It's kind of always my go-to at any first-person shooter, that type of weapon. So I just outfitted it with plasma ammo because that's the most, in my opinion, it's the most useful. And then I put shock ammo on my shotgun for close range, and then that's kind of how I've been doing. And then I also have this like rocket launcher kind of thing, which is good against like lots of enemies or big things. So I say the combat starts out frustrating, but it gets better. The writing is good. It's funny. I would say the one problem I have is the whole crux of the story for this game is that corporations they run everything in the Outer Worlds.
It's not the best choice. It's Spacer's choice.
Make a choice. Spacer's choice. But anyway, so there's these big corporations that run pretty much everything in these Outer Rim territories. But the problem for me, not a problem, but one thing that makes it a little frustrating, because a lot of the time when you're given a quest, you'll be given options for how to handle that quest.
Yep.
Even if it's a quest given to you by someone from a corporation, you can side with the corporations and complete quests for them. Make certain choices that'll make them happy and the various different types of rebels unhappy. The problem is that the corporations are never painted but anything but cartoonishly controlling.
Yeah.
There's no sympathy for them at all. So there's no reason to, there's no conflict with the ethical choices, at least so far. Because well,
the power, I thought the power one was pretty conflicting.
I mean, kind of, in the sense that you're screwing over the town if you divert power to the rebel camp. But the thing is if it would be less, it would be a little more of a, for me, a little more convincing of an ethical dilemma if they didn't make every head honcho for the every middle manager for the corporations also like cartoonishly evil to an extent. So if they made him just a sympathetic middle manager where he doesn't have any hatred for these workers, but he has to do what the corporation tells him to and blah, blah, blah.
That was Pavetti, though. She brought up the sympathetic nature of, hey, we don't like this corporation, but this is the best we have. And if you take it away, we're done.
I mean, yeah.
What choice did you end up going with that one?
I diverted power to the rebels. I said,
oh, man. So
I said fuck the town.
Okay, I was super tempted to do that because if you read through the stuff as you're going through the power plant, the fucking cannery's in the red. This isn't just a good choice for the rebels. This is a good choice for business because fuck the cannery. It's costing everyone money.
And if you do, because they have, and this is kind of similar to Fallout, and you've never played Fallout, but it's taken freight from it, which isn't surprising because the people who made this made New Vegas.
Right.
But there's a lot of context in the terminals and data pads and stuff that litter the environments that you explore. So if you read them, it shows context, and the context almost always is the corporations are super awful to their workers. Super, super awful, almost umbrella corporation levels of awful. Yeah. So it kind of takes away any moral conflict for me, where I'm like, I would never side with anything one of these corporations wants to do because they're almost always terrible. So,
well, here's the thing. I actually sided with the corporation. I sent it back to the town.
Random motherfucker around here.
You go to the rebel leader's name and she calls you a snake. And she's like, I'm not having anyone come back. I'm not whatever. But as a typical sort of this kind of a game, you can go back and you can since I have such high persuasion, I told Reed to basically he has to step down and the rebel leader is the one who's going to take over. And so my end was the cannery is going to be replaced by the garden and she's going to be the one leading Edgewater and he has to leave.
Wow, so you found a third option. I didn't even know.
Yeah, it was
interesting. That was an option.
I was dumping, I've been dumping stuff into long range weapons, persuasion, and tech has been my three.
Yeah, that's been kind of what I've been doing. I guess I just didn't take the time to try to find that third path because
I just felt bad because Pavetti made such a Parvati? Strong case. Parvati? Yeah, sorry. I don't know why I said Pavetti. Yeah, the chick, the engineered girl that follows
me. Yeah.
Like, because, like, she, like, when she said it, I was like, you know, I mean, the cannery was in the red, so, like, you know, we could just fuck those guys, and I don't have any qualms. It seems like this is cut and dry right here. But when she said, like, her thing about how, like, everything is just, like, failing, and, like, the cannery's in the red because people keep leaving work and all this stuff, and it's just like, I don't want to disappoint you now.
You gotta cut off the limb of a dying limb so that the rest of the tree may thrive.
That's what I was thinking, but yeah, no, I ended up going and finding an interesting third part in there, so.
Yeah. It's fun. I would call it good, not great. It still holds my attention. I played until 3 a.m. again last night, nice. Which is pretty good. It's doing something right. The writing's good. The side characters, Parvati stands out by a mile with the other. I have Sam, the cleaning robot, and I have...
Oh, you got him working? I haven't gotten him working yet.
He's very funny, but he has no other... The thing is, there's no backstory to him. He just sprays things with corrosive agent.
Is there ever a backstory to robots? They got made, and now they're a robot.
There's nothing to him. There's this other guy who I took on, Felix or something. He's very much one note, so I don't really use him.
Do you have my car or whatever the guy's
name? No, I told him to pound sand. I didn't take him with me. I was like, no, thank you. We don't need a god man on my quest to go fuck over the corporations. Like, I don't need you judging me. It's so far Parvati is by far the most fleshed out character, and they did do a lot of good work on her with her side quests and stuff like that. So I would say that, you know, because I don't want to spend forever talking about this game, but it's a good game. But it is Fallout in space. I would say it's. I didn't play New Vegas, so, but I've heard that it's probably the best of the Fallout games. I would say if you enjoyed Fallout, especially if you enjoyed New Vegas, this is Fallout without the glitches, with better writing. But with the same sort of combat, except I like what they've done with the time dilation in place of VATS. It's a little less easy mode.
Yeah.
So I like that. Graphics are fine.
I like them. I like the graphics.
But if you like, it's very Firefly-esque. To me, if Firefly was a video game, this is what it would look like.
And how could you say no to the Preacher then?
Well, because he wasn't like Shepherd Book. He was the Vic. To me, the Vicar had ulterior motives to everything he did that were kind of vaguely sinister.
Yeah, so, it's gonna be great. I have him on the ship. I can't wait to see what he does.
Whereas Shepherd Book had ulterior motives and a backstory and stuff, but he was generally, I felt, just a good person. This guy I didn't think was a very good person. So I was
Shepherd was at his point where he was washing his hands,
trying to clean up, get clean of his past.
Yeah.
So, that's for me. That's the Outer Worlds. I'm feverishly trying to finish it before this Friday because Friday sees two new games, and I'm really going to purchase both of them on the day they come out. So.
Oh, so you're getting both Sword and Shield?
No, I'm getting the Star Wars game and Pokemon.
Okay, cool.
Which isn't on the show notes, but I'd like to briefly talk about at some point.
Yeah, because I don't know if I'm going to get Star Wars immediately. I really want to because I super enjoyed Titanfall 2, and this is Respawn once again. And it's
Man, the same people who did Titanfall 2?
Yeah, so...
Oh, I loved Titanfall 2!
Yeah, so that's the thing, because Titanfall 2, not to go on a tangent, it was, like, a really... interesting, goofy story, and then very clearly they just let the programmers, like, hey, this is gonna be your level, come out something weird. And then each level has, like, a very odd thing, like, you had the platform weird jumping, like, odd
they
level.
They had a really cool parkour platforming level. They had, of course, the level that everyone... Yeah, the time level, which was super creative. That could have been its own game.
That could have been... Yeah, God, that would have been amazing, too. And so, like, knowing that, going into Star Wars, I'm just, like, super excited. Like, this... Like, I don't want to put this kind of weight on them, but this might be the only EA developer... that might still have something of quality products coming out. And that's partly why I'm excited. It's just that I now have, like, 5 games I'm working on right now that I don't know if I'll have time. And Pokemon's coming out.
Yeah, I went from not playing very much many video games at all to now I'm going to have 3 on my slate.
Yeah. It's going to be rough.
So what do we want to talk about next?
You guys want to hear a fun space joke?
Oh jeez, is that the thing you just posted in our Telegram?
No. That's actually pretty funny though. Okay. So how did everyone know that the astronauts on the Challenger had dandruff?
Oh no, Pat, don't. Not the Challenger.
How?
Because they found their head and shoulders on the beach.
Oh my god!
I knew it was going to be bad. I didn't know it was going to be that bad. Jesus. All right. Yeah, you want to talk about Pokemon, Ian, and what's been going on with that?
Oh, man. So, yeah. So, context, real quick, is there's another Pokemon game coming out. It's a new generation. There is a new Pokemon game, and it's ethnic variants or whatever the hell you want to call it. The community is interesting. So it's a mainline game.
Bitches.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's a mainline Pokemon game, whereas the general consensus is the stuff like Detective Pikachu or even the Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee games are kind of separate. But this is a new one with new Pokemon in a new area, the Galar region, which is supposed to be England London, Great Britain. So the whole controversy is that the creators said several months ago that you will not be able to catch every Pokemon from all of the different games, the national decks, as it's called. You will not be able to catch every Pokemon in the national decks or import all the Pokemon from the national decks into this game. There will be the new Pokemon from this region and then carefully selected Pokemon from all of the other generations that they want to include. Right. Their argument was that it made the game easier to balance this way rather than including everybody, and that they did it in the interest of game balance. So yeah.
And
naturally,
also to, I think they also tried to say something like, we didn't have all the sprites ready for this. Like, it was a lot of Pokemon to transition into a full console sprite thing.
Which I guess I can get because there are like 800 Pokemon now. So the community collectively shit itself over this.
Yes.
It was ugly at points.
It's still
a lot of there's a lot of meme fuel that came out of it, which I found entertaining.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But the general idea here is there's a lot of people calling Nintendo lazy or sacrificing quality. I would say that's going a bit far because aside from the 0.01% of people that actually complete the national decks in these in these games, because I can't overstate 800 different Pokemon. It is really hard to complete the national Pokedex nowadays. Almost impossible unless you spend ungodly amount of hours doing it. And people pitching their fit, I'm like, half of these Pokemon I'm not even going to use. So in the national decks, like, oh boy, Garbodor is not in this game, I'm not going to purchase it. Like, really? Is that is that really the hill that we're going to die on here? So, I think it's, at the end of the day, I think it's fine as long as the game is good, but we'll see.
I think that's where I'm falling to. I posted a picture, and it's going to take a while to sift through that, but like, it's basically shows the Pokemon that we know and love, like 800 or whatever of them, like the ones included, and basically the ones in green are in Sword and Shield, while the ones in white are not going to be in there. Orange is they're in, but they have like some new form as similar to like the Aloha thing, but like for the British version of that. Charizard and Charmander, Charmeleon are the only starters from the entire previous games.
It's an odd decision.
Yeah, it's basically like everyone else is out, but Charizard's too popular to cut out, I guess, is the way I read that. My take is like, oh man, like Salamence isn't in this game, Jumpluff isn't in there, that's a little disappointing, neither is, I'll still have Clefable, Tyranitar's coming back in, and so is Militech, so I'm like, listen, there's some favorites in here that I'm not going to get, but then there are a lot of them that are still here that I'm kind of excited about anyway. So, like, I kind of looked at this like they cut all the three-form dragons basically out, and I think that's because they're going to have their own ones coming in. So why have a bunch of repeats? I think also, like you said, the balancing, like, are we at the point now where we might start repeating if they were all in? Like, would we have, like, a certain type that's like, okay, well, this is just Dragonite again?
Well, I mean, we're kind of already there, to be honest. There's... The designs for new Pokemon have never been as good since probably Generation 2 or 3, but that's another discussion for another day.
Probably.
It's, to my knowledge, I haven't read too much about the structure of the games, but it's going back to a slightly more traditional gameplay format after the Alola games went and experimented with different different alternatives to the traditional gym structure. Apparently this one has... something like 18 gyms. There's like a minor league and for gyms. I think that's what I've heard. I haven't. Yeah, I it's kind of unconfirmed. Yep. But I was very famously the person who used to say that I wanted them to do a different format. I wanted something different with the gameplay. I was sick and tired of 8 gyms and Elite Four and done. That was I was the loudest voice on that hill. I would like to publicly say that I was wrong.
Well, I just didn't like the Aloha formula.
Well, that's
like,
the thing. I played the Alola. I did not finish the last generation Pokemon games. I played through a bunch of it and then I stopped. The tone and the aesthetic didn't really work for me.
Nope.
But they tried something very different and good for them, but I didn't like it. And I realized something about myself, which is that I play these games because they're comfort food. It's the same reason that I eat Cheez-Its and I like casserole dishes in the winter. And I drink coffee every day because this is, I love these games because they remind me of, they make me feel like when I was a kid, and they're very comfortable to play. They're easy in the sense that they're not overly challenging. They fulfill that completionist side of me that has always been there. But they're fun. They make me feel like a kid again. It's not because I'm looking for a challenging new gameplay format, which is what I thought I wanted, and I was wrong. So I'm going to just say that I was wrong. I'm sorry, Pokemon. You know what you were doing. I was incorrect. I'm glad that they're going back to something a little more traditional, and I will buy this game, and I will probably finish this game because it looks more like the Pokemon I knew from when I was a kid.
So I'm similar. I just think that like Pokemon is like the way it was very, very good. I think that they could be more so in the sense that like you have a lot of little weird spin-off Pokemon games that don't, at least to me, like you got like the puzzle Pokemon game or Pokemon.
Oh
game.
Shit, Metagross isn't in this. Fuck it, not buying it, done. anyway, sorry, continue.
But like, I always thought that you could have just wrapped up all these weird side ones, like Pokemon Snap or whatever, into a full-fledged Pokemon game as like an open-world, fun little like, hey, you know, eventually the main quest is the Pokemon League and beating whatever team is doing their thing. But like, you don't have to get there if you don't want to anytime soon. You can go and take pictures if you want for this thing, or like you can go and be a Pokemon Ranger over here if you want it, or you know, there's the beauty contest. You all gotta have beauty contest guys, and you know,
you want the Red Dead Redemption of Pokemon games where you can do anything.
Yeah, like that's, and I always thought that like with a big home console, I was like, they have the potential now to do something like that. Do I think that this one will be it? Probably not. I mean, I'll eat that words.
Well, that is something like interesting to note, right? That this is the first Pokemon game on the Switch.
Yep.
Well, all right. So correction, the first mainline Pokemon game, because the Let's Go Eevee, Let's Go Pikachu were on the Switch, but it was a completely different, it was a completely different format where they used the Pokemon Go catching technique, whereas this one will be traditional battling and catching.
Yep. Although there is some link to the Pokemon Go with this, right?
I have no idea.
I think, so I was talking to a friend and they said something about like, if you have the ball, like Pokemon ball thing for Go, it'll let you get Mew or something. I forget. Mew is in this game.
Does anyone have that though?
Yeah.
The ball?
I don't. I didn't want to pay money for Pokemon Go. But yeah, something
which
like
one that. Are you getting, Richard?
I'm probably end up getting sword, even though I think that the legendary design looks like shit and it looks lazy.
Oh, it's a dog. It's a wolf holding a sword in its mouth.
Whereas the other one looks like the shield is in.
It's a mane.
It's like created into it. And I was like,
right, it's
really
a lion's
clever.
Mane, which I thought was kind of cool. But I was this is a Pokemon holding a sword. Is the sword part of it? Did the sword
know.
Give birth? Did the sword come out of a vagina at some point?
Yeah,
is what
yeah.
I'm asking.
It, man.
These are the questions that I need to know answers to before I can make an informed decision.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So I'm going to probably get sword.
Okay, then I'll get shield.
Cool.
So that we can, you know, be basic, I guess.
Yeah, we can compare notes. And.
So yeah, sword and shield. We'll see.
Yeah. apparently, so the new stuff that just came out the other night was that they're introducing these, like, mints that will change the nature of your Pokemon for you.
Oh, so, thank Christ.
I know. So, like, fucking finally, I hated this goddamn grind we did. So if you got, like, a bold nature on a thing, and it's like, here's attack and minus defense or something, like, now you can change it to your jolly nature and speed and knock off special attack or something, and that's the one you needed.
Although that does have weird implications where we've gone from Pokemon breeding farms to mind-washing.
Yes, basically.
Because now we're brainwashing Pokemon to behave the way that we want them to behave.
Right. But, like, I think that this is nice. Well, listen, unless they had come up with a more functionally or fun mechanic, I don't see this as a bad thing. Like, it just cuts through the stupid fat of what it was beforehand. Especially for legendaries. Like, this is super good for a legendary because that you had no option.
Yeah, you were stuck with it at that point.
But, like, when I saw this, again, with the community, they're fucking assholes about it. Like, they won't shut up about the National Dex not being in here, that they're literally burning any other news that comes out. They're like, what, you're fucking getting rid of gameplay because of this. Like, this is terrible news. Terrible.
I don't think that riding back and forth on a bike while you wait for a random number generator to pop up an egg for a Pokemon counts as gameplay.
Yeah, no. I don't
Call
think so
me
either.
Controversial,
I don't
but
think starting
that was not gameplay.
I don't think restarting your game to your save point just to make sure your legendary has the jolly nature you want is gameplay. That's just... Fuck you. Fuck you guys. That this is bad news to you guys. This is fantastic.
I think that's like the general theme of a lot of media stuff that we have, especially particularly movies. That we aren't really talking about today, but could if we wanted to, is that a lot of fan bases are just full of just terrible little bitches.
They're really mean. Yeah.
I have something to add to this.
Ooh, bring it on.
Patrick, you're still here?
Yeah. Well, Patrick, you guys are talking about all sorts of random bullshit I don't care about.
Are you getting Pokemon, Pat?
Probably not.
When is the last Pokemon game you played, Patrick?
I played Pokemon Go and Black and White, I guess.
No, okay. You played X and Y with us, I thought.
Oh, yeah, that is right. I did play X and Y.
I liked X and Y. I thought those were good.
Yep.
So I finished X and Y, and I feel like that was the first Pokemon game I ever finished. I don't think I finished Black and White.
What about the originals? You never finished the originals? Like Red and Blue?
No, never beat the Elite Four.
Oh, wow. What? That's tragic.
So, and that's kind of the story of many of my childhood games, is that, like, most of the games that I loved the most, I never actually beat. Like, I played thousands upon thousands of hours, but I would just, like, run around and do random kid things, you know?
That's fair. I never finished the main story in Skyrim, even though I played it for well over 100 hours.
I never finished Mega Man 4, even though I can't tell you how many times I played that when I was a kid.
There you go. See?
Pat, would you like to talk about a game that you're interested in?
Sure. And I can see, I'm going to show you guys how to actually do a gaming segment.
All right.
You want to talk about Destiny 2?
No, but I know you do, and I want to hear your opinion.
Is that still a game that people play?
Yeah. And it's moved over to Bungie now, so we don't have to worry about Activision being awful.
Oh, boy.
Steam. It's on Steam now.
So, they came out with the new expansion, Shadowkeep. And the expansion happens on the moon and has really Hive undertones, but actually is about the Vex, which is really weird.
Okay. Interesting.
And but the content is fun. The gameplay is as it's always been. There's just, in my opinion, at this point, there's so much to do in Destiny. If you're a power player, like you spend 8 hours a day playing Destiny and that's it, I'm sure you have the same opinion as when Destiny 2 first came out, where you would quickly run out of things. But for a guy like me who just doesn't have enough time at all to even play the basics in the games that I want to play, it's a perfectly rounded experience. New guns are fun. Gameplay is pretty varied. I think they've gotten their stuff together with the narrative and stuff. But it's just par for the course Destiny. If you didn't like Destiny in the past, you're not going to like Destiny in the future. So this expansion is not going to bring you back. What I want to talk about, though, is how upset I am about the crossplay compatibility. Okay. Particularly for people like me. So, Ian, I don't know if you know this story, but the idea is that, just to give you a little background, is the when it moved from Blizzard to Bungie, to Steam, through Bungie, they decided that they were going to do crossplay and unified saves on the on Steam, right? And that's great. Like, there's really no issue with that. However, the way that they implemented it was that only, like, you can merge your accounts together, but only one account can be, like, active and crossplay compatible at a time. And so it essentially, for somebody like me, it makes it worthless. So let me explain to you what I mean. So I did pretty much all of the original Destiny 2 content and all of my Destiny 1 content on the PS4. And so, like, I have all the original raid guns and everything on my PS4 save file. Then I got it on PC, which is an experience I like a lot better. And therefore, I continue to play on the PC. And I beat the game on PC, particularly with my Hunter. But I never went and did any of the raids and stuff on the PC because, like, why do I want to do that again? And raiding is just stressful anyway. So I don't have any of, like, the ultra endgame content from Destiny release, from the Destiny 2 release, on my PC. Well, I thought this was going to be, like, an awesome connection so that I could finally have those old guns again. And that turns out not to be the case. So what happens is you merge all your accounts together so that if you go to Bungie.com or whatever it is, Bungie.net, you can see all of your characters. So I can see all the characters on the PS4 version and on the PC version. But I can only select one version to be crossplay, and you can't merge the characters together. So
that's a bit of a butt hurt.
So like what I've done is I chose my PC version, of course, because it has all my up-to-date content. So I can log in on the PS4 and play my PC character. I mean, just fine. Or I can switch the account around so that I can play my PS4 character, but I can't do, like, both at the same time and have a unified inventory so I can have all of my achievements and guns and everything all in one place. So there you go. Fuck you, Bungie. Like, I thought you were going to be great.
Yeah, so close, but not at all.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, Pat. That sucks.
Yep. So that's my gripe about it. But like I said, I really enjoy it a lot. I know I'm a Destiny 2 apologist because I like it so much.
I mean, I don't begrudge you for liking it. No, it wasn't for me, but I'm glad that you're still enjoying it.
Yep.
I have forgiven Destiny for the false hope I had when it first came out at this point. I think the world has adequately evaluated Destiny to what I believe. It's fine. It's not what it was hyped to be, and everyone is okay with admitting that.
So I became, obviously I played a shit ton of Destiny 2 when it came out, but I was really succumbing to what I was hoping Destiny would be, kind of like what Richard's talking about, until Anthem came out. And Then I realized that, like, all of this hype about, like, oh, what Destiny should be and what they need to do and da-da-da-da might at this stage of technology and development just be an insurmountable mountain. Like, that we might just be asking for too much in this style of game. And so with that shift in perspective, I started appreciating Destiny a lot more. And then, like I said, with the limited time I have available to play those types of games, I mean, it's plenty of content for me to enjoy myself when I can.
What if Outer Worlds, but multiplayer? That's what I want from Destiny.
I mean, you guys tell me.
Well, I mean, this isn't me going any farther with this, but like, since it has dialogue trees and stuff, it could be like the Old Republic, where you make rolls to see who says, like, what, and you can, like, totally fuck over somebody because, or not fuck them over, like, they don't get the morality thing, but, like, the story cutscene will go into the dark side version if you decided and won the roll or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think Outer Worlds would play well as a multiplayer. Because think about it like this. Outer Worlds really isn't an open world game. You pretty much discover things as you're on the narrative path of whatever story quest you're going through. It's not in the vein of Skyrim or something where you just wander in a direction and you hop along adventure and things like that. It's not really that type of game. So I think you're asking a bit much of it. I think.
Well, no, it doesn't need to be open world. It could still be the same function. I just want a buddy next to me and us to have a gaggle of time as, like, I'm trying to be morally just and this person's being chaotically evil.
I don't think that translates well to an RPG video game. I think that's Dungeons. Like, you want to play Dungeons and Dragons.
I mean, it works. Like, again, it works in the MMO Old Republic, just that Old Republic's combat is kind of archaic at this point.
Anyway, sorry. Ian, we what is it called where all internet conversations devolve into talking about Hitler?
Oh, yeah, yes, I know what you're talking about.
It devolves into Old Republic or Knights of the Old Republic for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because I think this is the third time we've devolved into Knights of the Republic.
Hey, you know what, though? Speaking of comparing things to that, let's talk about Disney.
Well, hold on. I got one more thing about Destiny 2 before you.
Damn. That would have been perfect.
Just one sentence. It's also free to play now. So
what? Really?
Yeah, so the...
I don't believe you.
Do I get anything for being Shadow an early backer? Do I get anything for having bought the base game before?
I don't know. It's not a monthly thing. Like, you still buy the expansions and stuff. So, like, you have to buy Shadowkeep at full price. But the base game and maybe, like, the year one content is all free to play now.
How generous. Because at this point, you'd need to buy $100 plus worth of content in order to get caught up.
Well, they do those, like, package deals and stuff, you know.
What's in the year one content?
I mean, don't take me verbatim for that, because it might not include the first two expansions, but I would think it would be the base game, Curse of Osiris, and then...
You're missing one. There was There was one after Taken King that was...
No, Destiny 2, Destiny 2.
Yeah, Taken King's
Destiny 1.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I can't believe there's this much of it already.
I know, right? Hard workers.
I think it's Curse of Osiris and then Warmind. I have this feeling that up to Warmind is free, but don't quote me on that. I know the base game at least is free.
Cool. Richard.
Yeah.
You had a transition.
Well, I did.
I'll tee you up again. Hang on. It seems like with Richard, all of his just go back to the Old Republic.
Yeah, Forsaken, that's what I missed, is Forsaken.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, so, you know, speaking of Forsaken, Disney! I got nothing. Disney Plus has released...
It's a thing, it has launched!
Yep.
I actually kind of love it.
I subscribed because it bundles in Hulu, so I have the ad-free Hulu, though, so I still pay a little bit more than you people, but it supposed to discount me the difference. That's what it
You'll
says.
You'll have to tell us what happens on your next bill.
Yeah, that's. I'm going to check. That seems like a level of, like, attention that I just don't have faith in our corporate overlords for noticing.
So, yeah.
There was no box to check for that.
Were you guys... I heard that there was... Because when we woke... My wife woke up before me this morning, and she goes to work at, like, 10, and I was sleeping still. And she made the account this morning, and when she woke me up, she was like, yeah, it's kind of glitching and stuff. I was only able to play this one thing. She says, look, apparently the servers went down for a bit. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, you'd think of the biggest media company in the freaking planet would be able to get day one right. But then I took it back because when I got on, everything was fine. So
yes, everything was fine for me as well.
I read a nice comment about those kinds of things. Is that the worst thing that can happen to you as a software company or software developer is if you do not have any problems on day one. because what that means is that nobody's using your service.
That's fair.
And that's really bad. So
seems like everyone is using it's all over the internet. Seems like everybody is in on this.
I had to see The Mandalorian. I had to know what that was going to be like.
Yep. Well, so should we talk about Disney Plus first before we talk about The Mandalorian?
Yes, probably.
So yes, was everyone's day one experience has been okay so far? I didn't have any problem. I watched multiple things.
I just watched one, but I did not have any problem either.
I would like to.
I had to log in twice. I logged in. Well, I created my account, and then after you put in your billing details, it automatically brought you to the homepage, you know, with where you can click on stuff.
Right.
And I clicked on stuff, and it kept saying, "Oops, something went wrong. Like, please try again." And no matter what you did, that's all it would say. And so, I logged out and then logged back in, and it worked perfectly. I haven't had any problems since.
I would like to note I am pleasantly surprised with the amount of 4K content that is available on Disney Plus, which
I don't have a 4K TV, so
yeah. So I purchased one when we moved into the house for my new, like, you know, TV room, movie room area, and so
wow, spending money to spend money.
No, but so yeah, I watched because I looked and there's a bunch of all of the Star Wars movies that are able to be in 4K or in 4K. I was like, nice. Oh, that's pretty cool. So I watched like the last hour of Rogue One in 4K, and I was like, man, this is really good.
That's the best part of Rogue One.
Yeah, it looks really fantastic. And so I was like, oh, man. And then I looked, like, kind of scrolled absentmindedly through the catalog of shows. I'm like, oh, Clone Wars is here. Rebels is here. That's pretty cool. And then, of course, they got all of their classic content, the Disney Vault. My wife is super excited for a bunch of Disney Channel shows from when she was a kid.
Yeah, like Lizzie McGuire.
Was pretty...
I have no idea. I don't know which one she's talking about. But...
Oh, man.
Now, there's, like, all the old cartoons, too. Like, apparently, like, the old X-Men show.
Yes, I saw those. Like, the Spider-Man animated shows and stuff like that.
Yep.
You guys are really missing the gold here, though, in that, Disney Plus is super cheap compared to the other service, at least.
$7. It's almost half. It's, like, just slightly over half of what Netflix.
Right.
Or 12 for like three of them.
And so I'm not convinced literally at all that that's going to maintain.
No, it'll definitely escalate.
So I did the year for $5.75
mm-hmm.
a month.
I think we're still on monthly, but
yeah. So I bought the year subscription, but like the other thing is that Disney Plus, at least for now, has that like reason to keep subscribing. So and I'll give you a few examples of this. Like Netflix, a lot of people, it's an actual thing, and you guys probably already know this, but the reason why Netflix makes so much money is because they have The Office.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Is because The Office is like the most binged series in the history of the world, and that more people watch The Office on Netflix at any given time than like all other shows combined, you know? And like that's not an exaggeration, it's an actual thing. So Disney Plus, well, let's do the other hand. So on the other hand, like CBS All Access, like they have some shows like the new Star Trek show that I want to see, but I'll just subscribe for a couple months or a month to view what I want to watch and then unsubscribe.
Yeah.
Disney Plus is more on the Netflix route because they made the fantastic decision to get The Simpsons.
And they got the Simpsons, yes. Which is
the huge. Simpsons World is the worst website fucking on the literally face of the planet. I hate the Simpsons World. And it's really hard to use. And so, like, at least for now, I'll maintain my Disney Plus subscription. Yeah, I bought a year, but you get me. Because of the Simpsons. Like, that's something that I'll constantly go back.
They also made the smart decision to, and we can slowly transition this towards The Mandalorian, to release The Mandalorian on a staggered schedule rather than putting the entire series out to binge, because they don't have as much original content at launch as like Netflix or Hulu has right now. Like, there's a bunch of stuff in my Netflix queue that's original content that I haven't watched yet, but Disney Plus, of course, they can't spend like $1 billion on original content to have it launch. So they're going to eventually have more series, and like Marvel series like WandaVision, and then the Cassian Andor Star Wars series, the Obi-Wan Star Wars series. But they're like, okay, we need to time this out, right? So Mandalorian will play through the end of the year, and then they'll probably drop something else. And the slow drip of content, which I think was a smart decision.
Agreed.
I also feel, just as a little side comment to that it's really my preferred way of viewing. Like, I feel like the binging, like releasing an entire season all at once and watching it over the course of a couple days or in an evening or whatever, like, that was nice as kind of a campy way to do things. But as far as actually digesting, watching, and enjoying a series, I much prefer the weekly model. And
I think
Brooke and I are Brooke is the same way. So, like, I had so much fun stretching out the Grand Tour content over the 6 months or whatever they released it on a weekly basis on Amazon. Because Brooke and I had a routine, like, it would come out every Thursday night or something like that. It was either Thursday or Friday. And we have a routine. We'd have dinner on that evening, and then we'd be like, oh, the new Grand Tour is on. Let's sit and we will watch it. And I mean, that's like 6 months worth of memories that we had watching that show.
I agree. Well, Susan and I had a similar experience with the last season of Game of Thrones, and say what you will about the last season of Game of Thrones, that's not really the point. It was an event for us where every Sunday we carved out the time and we watched it together, and it was enjoyable. It was an event, which is nice. So I think if it's something that has a lot of weight to it as a show, it works even better. So like things like Game of Thrones or like this new Star Wars show, I think it works very well that way. If you want to throw an entire British baking show onto your network for me to watch all at once, that's fine. But I think that doing it this way for maybe your weightier shows might be a better decision. So I think you also don't remember as much when it's binged. Right. Like, I really enjoyed a lot of the now extinct Netflix Marvel shows like Daredevil and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I honestly can't remember, because it's paced weird in my head since I watched so much of it at once. It didn't have the natural breaks in the narrative that let the story breathe.
Right.
So I feel like I didn't internalize it as much as where, for example, the last season of Game of Thrones, I can pretty much say beat by beat the pace and narrative of the last season because it sat for a week. Sort of, I thought about it and internalized, and then we moved on. So,
Should we? I assume we're going to talk about The Mandalorian next. Should we give a spoiler, Richard?
Yeah.
Do we want to give just general impressions first and then spoilers, or do you just want to go right
in? No, I just want to talk about it.
I just want to talk about it because I think my general impressions are going to probably
mark the timestamp, Richard.
All right, timestamp.
Jump ahead to whatever it says in the comments for end of spoilers to Mandalorian.
Yeah. So, but to be fair, I think you'll be fine for the most part. But
who's going to be listening to this before they watch the episode?
That's the thing. So, yeah, you've been warned. You know, if you progress here, you know, it's assumed you've watched the show or that you don't mind spoilers.
Ian, the first question that I asked Richard, and honestly, I want to hear Richard's thoughts first. Like, the first question that I asked Richard when we got on the call waiting for you was, yeah, we're going to talk about these two shows in the podcast, and we don't want to give up too much during that pre-show that we did. But Do you have strong opinions about The Mandalorian and Rick and Morty, or just opinions, or really not much opinion at all?
I have stronger opinions about The Mandalorian than I do for Rick and Morty. I would not say I have no opinion. I would say I have opinions about Rick and Morty. I have fairly strong opinions for The Mandalorian, but not like super strong.
Yep.
Okay. And that's what, Richard, you said too, right?
Yep, that's pretty much what I said.
Well, so I was completely the opposite. Like, I have really strong opinions about the first episode of Rick and Morty. And then, I mean, I'm not saying I don't have any opinion about Mandalorian, but it's a different conversation.
Well, it's a completely different type of show, too.
Right. Yeah, so. Yeah, we are looking for, like, you know, does...
And contextually, it's different too, because we've had three seasons of Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland showing that they know what they're doing with Rick and Morty. Whereas this is the, I think it's important to note, this is the first ever live action Star Wars television show ever.
Yes.
They've only ever done animated up until this point. So this is a kind of an important thing for the franchise if it's going to continue into a prosperous future. It's kind of important that they get it right.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, Richard, you wanted Richard to go first?
Yeah, let's let Richard go first this time.
Okay, so I liked it a lot. I don't know too much on Mandalorian stuff other than, once again, going back to the Old Republic. But what I do know is Mandalorians are sort of like the, like, think of them like Greek Spartans, but with, like, the idea of what Rome would do, where, like, they have no problem with incorporating who they conquered into them, and then you're instantly a Mandalorian as well. So there's no real race between them. They have the T-shaped visor helmets or whatever, and that's pretty much it. They've tried to take over the galaxy, I think, two or three times in the past, but...
Hasn't worked out well for them.
No. I mean, they got pretty darn close a couple of times, But where they are in this show is very, or where they have been for like the last 300 years or something is very similar to like where the Jedi were in the beginning of A New Hope, where like they're scattered, there's not a huge like following, there are individual little tribes here and there, or they're just a bounty hunter or something here and there, but like they have very much lost a lot of what they used to have as their power. And so that's kind of cool to see in the beginning of the show. Like, it has that very similar feeling of how Obi-Wan talks about the Jedi of, you know, they used to be something, but, like, now they're gone. And in this, they don't talk about it. They just sort of, you can just sort of see, like, it as, well, there's not really much here left of this people or whatever. They just.
I appreciate that they didn't go into the exposition dump on that. They pretty much just let it breathe that this is a noble warrior culture. That's all you need to know, that he's alone.
Yeah, unlike this podcast, we didn't spend 15 minutes at the beginning talking about exposition.
Basically, yes. I appreciated the like, this is what Star Wars needed, apparently, is to have Master Chief in a show no dialogue, and they just...
He might take the helmet off at some point.
Yeah, he might take it off, but like maybe what they needed was less dialogue, because sometimes in the new Star Wars movies, people probably should shut up more. And here they are with very little dialogue, and I felt like it made the show or the episode more impactful as a result. Like, it just felt like the action spoke more as because of it. Like, maybe I don't want to go this far down, but maybe similar to like how Mad Max made a lot of people feel.
I was wondering if you were going to draw that comparison.
Yeah,
I would say there are, of course, Mad Max is on its own. Mad Max is one of the better films of the decade. But
I'm not going to say that this is as close to that. But
I see what you're saying though, because like it used not a lot of dialogue. The music was pretty. I felt pretty strong at setting the tone, and just a lot of visuals, a lot of well choreographed action.
Yep.
Anyway, continue.
But yeah, no, I mean,
you said Mad Max, so I had to speak.
Oh no, that's fine. so I think that's what makes me extremely hopeful for the show. And then also, like, this is a area of Star Wars that does not get a lot of talked about. I mean, it's barely known even by the fanatics, because there's just not a lot done with Mandalorians. They've only ever been like used as supporting characters in other things. We've never had a major, even Boba Fett is basically a supporting character in even his own little mini stories. It seems like you just don't get a whole lot insight into what is the Mandalorian thing. So I think like this is an area that they can have a lot of fun with, and in a way, like Mandalorians are the non-force Jedi, like in terms of what their reputation is. It's not like they're, you know, as good as Jedi, but like people have always kind of, it's like how we think of Spartans, where they're just nuts. Yeah,
they fought a war against the Jedi and they almost won. And that's pretty hard. But I mean, that's not really important. The war isn't super important to the show and to the discussion of the show. But
no, it's not. And they don't even mention it, to be honest, which is fine.
They hint at it a little bit, which I liked. They didn't, there was a lot of visuals there that hinted to a deeper lore, which they didn't feel the need to talk about, which I liked. So
right, because it's not going to be something that somebody brings up in normal conversation. So it's important to not have that kind of forced in there, which is what some
right. Both like characters know it, so there's no reason for them to talk.
Right. So if it comes up, it'll come up. But until then, you're kind of left assuming that you like, okay, well, clearly they used to be better, but or bigger, but now they aren't, and that's all that you need to know for now. So yeah, I'm extremely hopeful. It seems like all the rumors were true about the first episode, that this was really, really good. I think that even when they did their little jokes, like the guy that he has the bounty for in the beginning, I thought that that was well done and didn't overstay its welcome. Again, unlike a lot of the other things in recent Star Wars movies.
Well, it wasn't slapstick, which I think was important.
Yes. Right. It was nervous chatter, which anybody in a, quote, hostage situation is probably going to attempt. And I thought that that was pretty well done. I think that the robot droid at the end was also... It was nice to sort of see a non-humorous, like I thought maybe they're just going to copy paste HK-47 into this, and they didn't. They just made this bounty droid come in.
IG-11. Yeah, he was entertaining, I felt.
He was entertaining, but he wasn't, and he wasn't Alan Tudyk's droid from Rogue One either.
No, so. They gave him a distinct sort of tone.
Yeah,
so.
more typical droidness to him, where it's just, like, not
the self-destruct. The self-destruct, yeah, the self-destruct gag was pretty great, I thought.
Yeah. I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. What do you guys think?
So, I'm really curious, well... Curious is the wrong word. I wanted to hear your guys' what you guys wanted to say first before I chimed in, because I felt the feelings that I was feeling throughout the episode really kind of took me in a different direction, and not in a bad way. I greatly enjoyed it, but at the same time, my first impression was that it's a really clippy show. I don't know a better way to describe that. It's just like the scenes are very short and direct and clippy. Like they move at a fast pace. And of course they do, because the show is only 35 minutes long.
It was like 40 something.
No, yeah. It's 39 minutes including the credits.
39, yep.
Wow. Okay.
And the credits were like 4 minutes long.
I imagine every episode is gonna have a different length, much like other shows that are not bound to TV networks like Game of Thrones, and that they just are like, okay, this is the natural pacing ending of the show. And like, it'll be like some weeks will probably be like that. And then some weeks will probably be longer. And I don't,
I felt that, moving from that, I loved the artwork at the end in the credits.
Oh, that was great.
That was amazing. That was phenomenal. Also I loved the complete change in direction, that they did with this compared to a lot of other modern shows nowadays, or at least what I feel is a cliche in modern shows, is that the entire show was both clean and sterile. Like, there was never any dirt on the dude's uniform. Like, you didn't have those scenes where he's walking through Mos Eisley's spaceport or something, and everybody's just all dirty, filthy, and everything. The show is the opposite of gritty.
Scuffed? He seemed pretty scuffed through the whole thing.
Like, it really is. It's the opposite.
I mean, I thought that his, like, chest plate was pretty pockmarked and everything. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't dirty, but he was, like, battle-worn.
Yeah.
Well, right, but, like, you could tell the look that they were getting, but it was not a gritty show. or like in the Solo movie is a good example. Like essentially the first hour of that movie. Yes,
I get what you're saying, because the difference is that in Solo they thought they mistook Gritty to be, let's just put dirt on everything and cover the whole shot with like a sepia filter. So whereas in this one, it was smart. So something, I think it needs to be noted how well they did showing over telling in this. And it's not just, so for example, I think it's important to note things with the costumes. Whoever did costume design on this did a really great job, because
your brother's on that show, right?
No, like you said, the Mandalorians, so his helmet, any of his like helmet and that new armor, it's polished to a sheen. But then like his certain other areas are pockmarked and stuff. But then you look at the stormtroopers in that episode, right, and they're dirty as fuck, because you have to think this is 5 years after Return of the Jedi. So the Empire is in disarray. It's probably fragmented. There's not much left of it. So whereas in the original trilogy, stormtroopers generally were clean appearance, shiny uniforms, because it's a symbol of the Empire that they're clean and powerful and blah, blah, blah. But now they're the minority. They're the defeated ones. So all the stormtroopers look like shit in this episode. So I thought that was, going along with what you're saying, it wasn't just grittiness for the sake of grittiness, just to be like, oh, it should be gritty.
Yeah, and I feel like that's too common of a trend in shows today, and that's really my main point, is that I never thought I would say this out loud, but the Disney fresh sheen was super refreshing. Like,
well, that's weird, because I would have normally said I hate that, because that was one thing with the prequels that kind of irked me at times, was just how perpetually clean everything stayed.
Well, that's because it was out of place in some situations. So, for example, like, how Coruscant looked super clean and untouched by the war towards the end of the prequel trilogy was out of place, because this was supposedly some sort of massive galactic war that was tearing the galaxy apart, but it didn't show that on screen. So there was a disconnect between what you're supposed to be feeling and experiencing and what is being conveyed. If I'm wrong, tell me, but it feels consistent here that you're not just putting dirt on everything because you're like, oh, it's the outer worlds, it's the outer rim, it should be dirty, everything's dirty, because apparently no one on the outer rim bath or laundry. But no, that's not necessarily true.
It feels like the dirt is earned here, or like it's actually like as you're progressing, you'll get more dirty along the way, as opposed to you start out dirty, you end dirtier, everything is just getting more and more dirty and place.
Yep. So yeah, I greatly enjoyed it. It's definitely my kind of show. And this coming from a guy who is not a hardcore Star Wars fan. And I think that it really goes against Richard's exposition at the beginning. And this isn't making fun of you, Richard. It's just
that's fine.
I really don't care what the 1,000-year history of the Mandalorians are. And I think the show, through the first 35 minutes, looked me directly in the face and was like, that's cool, we gotcha. You know, it's not that big of a deal.
You don't need to know anything about
that. And I think that's what I was trying to say, is that like it kind of tried to do a little bit of both. Like, for me, I do know some of it, and the show's like, hey, we're aware. And then for someone like you, they're like, hey, don't worry about it, though. We're not going to really need to go into that. I enjoyed how they kind of acknowledged me as a viewer, but also were like, yeah, but, you know, that's a different story. That's not this story. We're not going to touch that, because we're not, you know, that was in the past for a reason. And
throwaway references to the lore, like where he's learning to ride that creature. Yeah. And the guy says, like, your ancestors rode these things. You telling me you can't do this? And blah, blah, blah. Like, it's a throwaway line, but to people who know the history of the Mandalorians, it's like, oh, that's consistent with the history of his culture. But to people who don't care, it's just a throwaway line saying you should be able to do this. So
and no more than that. They didn't have to go. He didn't argue with the guy. He just got back up. Right. He's like, well, all right, fine.
It definitely feels like a Western. The whole thing where they say that tone. Yeah. If there's a Clint Eastwood feel to it, for sure.
Yeah.
His whole the way he the actor is the same guy who played Oberyn Martell in Game of Thrones. If either of you care, Yeah. So who I really liked.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think everyone did.
He was a fantastic
opener. He was fantastic. So that swagger is definitely there. But it's understated, but it's definitely where he's like confident and feels in charge. He knows what he's doing. He's in charge of every room he's in. It's hard to act when your face is completely obscured by a helmet, but
yeah.
You definitely feel like you're getting to know the character, even though there's limited dialogue and you can't see his face, which I wondered. So real quick, I want to talk about things that I thought might happen that I was hoping wouldn't, and that I'm glad didn't happen.
Before you do, quick question. I did not know that this was going to be between 6 and 7. I thought this was between 3 and 4. So when he said the Empire has been gone for a while, I was surprised. I was like, wait, when is this?
No, yeah, it's after Return of the... It's 5 years after Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
Cool. Can I also ask a quick question before we all transition into Ian's...
Oh, before I start fanboying all over the place?
Yeah, because I want to interact with that too, but I don't want to forget. So... Like, for people who know the lore and everything like that, the scene where he's with the Empire guy, and the Empire guy goes, oh, this is your down payment. He puts down that little block.
Oh, the Beskar steel?
Yeah. So, at the moment he did that, like, did you guys know that's some, like, Mandalorian thing?
Nope.
I don't... Okay. If that has been mentioned in lore before, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because for me, who had literally no idea, coolest fucking thing ever, like that.
Well, that's the thing, though. And for me, maybe it does exist. I don't know. I haven't Googled it or
probably,
anything.
Who knows?
Probably at some point.
It's probably part of their as they showed. I first thought, I wonder if they use this for their armor or something.
Well, they show it too. It deflects at some point. Like, doesn't he like deflect a blaster bolt or something off of one of his shoulder plates? Like that, so. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, showing over telling. He doesn't say, like, oh, isn't it true that you Mandos use this for your armor and blah, blah. Like, no, he just fucking takes it to the smith and gets a shoulder plate out of it, which they treat with such respect. And, like, they don't – it's showing over telling, the best type of storytelling, so.
Right. Okay, so continue.
Oh, so I was – leading up to this, I had read a couple of different things, and of course the internet is the worst when it comes to speculating before Star Wars stuff.
Of course.
And there was a definite theory going around that, because there were no early reviews for this show, which some people were saying, yes, they're like, well, that's usually not a good sign that there are no early reviews. But I was like, I can't imagine that this is bad. I can imagine controversial. I can't imagine bad. Just because of who was in charge, you know, you got the major minds behind Marvel behind this. So I can't imagine bad. So the other thing people were saying was that the reason that there were no early reviews was because there was supposed to be some big twist reveal that they didn't want spoiled. And this reviewer was like, I bet that it's the reveal that this guy is Boba Fett. And I was like, I fucking hate that idea. Please do not let that be the case. Because I was like, we're finally clear of Boba Fett. This is going to be a new character. Because I've said over and over again that Star Wars will not grow unless you can create new content within this world that's not tied so tightly wound around Darth Vader and the Skywalker saga. I was like, if you do Boba Fett in this, a character that I do not care about at all, it would be a huge disappointment. And they didn't do that. Which I was super happy with.
Super, super happy, yeah.
Just tremendously happy that they didn't do that. The reveal at the end, it was not... Because I was thinking, I was like, oh, I wonder who his target's going to be. Maybe it'll be like Han Solo, or it'll be like, you know, some character we already know. Because I was thinking about that. But that's the thing. So he's like, oh, it's a male, he's 50 years old. Like, that's all you get. And I was like, I'm doing math in my head. I'm like, Luke's too young. Han probably is at the right age. Maybe Lando.
I didn't
think
that it was going to be a character we knew. I was just going to assume it was an old man.
Well, that's the thing. I was like 50 years old. I'm like, Han probably fits that bill. I'm like, oh God, if it's the guy from Solo in this or some bullshit. Like
CGI Leia.
Yeah, I was just like, oh man, like, please don't do this. I was like, don't do this. The first episode of a new show, don't throw in some character that we recognize from the films. Like, because that weighed on me a lot. That's why I'm excited to watch this again. But they didn't do that. And so, real quick, let's talk about the twist.
Yeah.
Which was that his target was a member of Yoda's species, which is never named in Star Wars. And that up in the general consensus is that Yoda and that one other character from, I guess, Phantom Menace or whatever, are the only ones of his species ever referenced in Star Wars whatsoever. That their species is generally considered to be very strong with the Force. So that's pretty crazy.
There's one in Knights of the Republic, too.
Okay. Oh, my God.
There it is. You get to drink every time you mention Knights of the Old Republic, I think. What did you guys think of that twist? Because I was all about it. I was like, oh, man, I didn't expect that. That's pretty cool.
Let me be a comic book guy here. Actually, it's not really a twist. It's more of a reveal than anything else.
My fucking God.
So I, from the layman's perspective, my first reaction was, oh, is that one of the Yoda people? And I was like, because of the ears, right? And I was like, well, the eyes aren't right. And so maybe it isn't. And I'm like, and I thought in the back of my mind, man, I'm going to have to ask Ian later, but I can't just lead with, oh, the Yoda reveal at the end, because then they're going to call me stupid because it's not a Yoda. It's like some.
No, it's definitely a, from you're definitely a Yoda.
You're in a safe place here, Pat.
You're in a safe place here.
Yeah. So then after that thought process went through my mind, I'm really excited. I think it's a great direction. And I was just completely enamored with the very last 5 seconds where he shoots the droid, which I was positive he was going to do anyway, because no self-respecting Mandalorian would split half the bounty.
Yeah, I thought the same thing too.
And then he really is showing affection towards this.
He reaches out a finger to it.
More like he's going to poke it.
Well, and then after that, the main artwork, like the first huge slide, is of that moment again. So, like, of him reaching out and the little Yoda reaching out too, because like they reach out together.
Yeah. It was a wonderful moment of showing instead of telling. And he was.
Holy crap. I didn't think this was still possible for Disney.
It humanizes him as he's ruthless. We saw that.
Right.
But he's also sympathetic. He's the perfect anti-hero. Yeah.
Right.
And they
let's not give him too much credit. He gets less money if it comes back dead.
That's fair. Well, that's the interesting question from here is, will he turn the Yoda creature over to this Imperial agent? By the way, Werner Herzog was great as the Imperial agent guy. Yes. I was like, oh man, I hope we see a lot more of him.
Same,
like that's agreed. He's just great in that role. So
I loved it. I honestly never thought, and I'm not putting a clamp on our talk about the episode, but I never thought that I would be willing and want to talk so in depth about 35 minutes of fast-paced content, which, like, to repeat Ian, it is the strength of showing over telling.
Yes. You know? Yep.
I would say this is probably, what would I say? I think this is as good as I could have hoped from a fan perspective and from just wanting Star Wars to succeed. I think this probably went about as good as you could have possibly hoped for. I would say it's the future is hopefully bright for the show, and it's a very good. They've said that they're probably going to do a hiatus from film after episode 9 until they get their shit together about what they want to do with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think transitioning to these Disney Plus shows like the Obi-Wan show, which I'm still down on, but whatever.
If it can be somewhat show. Like this, because again, I kind of feel like all these like little dives probably should be more showing than telling. And if it can be like this, then I'm hopeful.
Well, that's the thing. It's also a great palate cleanser, and it expands the world where they're like, okay, this is lower stakes because it's not a film, first of all. So we can do some different things with it, which is good. So they can expand the universe this way organically, and then hopefully, I mean, the executive producers, we should note, it's Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni who are extensively tied in with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
And, you know, I would be perfectly okay at this point to handing the reins of producing and directing to some more Marvel people when it comes to Star Wars movies going forward.
Maybe. There's times in the Marvel Universe, though, that I feel like their dialogue could be tightened up a little bit, too.
Well, it's a little quippy, but think about what they've done and what they've accomplished with the cinematic universe that no one else has been able to do.
I would much prefer the Marvel quality, even if it isn't all, like, even if it isn't, like, 100%, like, A-plus for me. If it's, I would rather take their B-plus kind of quality over what we're getting in Star Wars.
So, is it a bad thing to say that, and I'm not just being edgy, like, is it a bad thing to say that I'm actually more excited about the episodic weekly release of this than the film coming out in December?
No, I don't think that's bad.
Well, yeah, I think the biggest problem leading up to Rise of Skywalker is that there was no... the end of The Last Jedi didn't really set up where the series was going to go from there. So Rise of Skywalker is almost like a completely standalone film because there was no stinger. There was no...
Luke, I am your father.
Well, that's the thing. At the end of Empire, it sets up the final confrontation perfectly because you've revealed the connection between Vader and Luke. So now you know that they're going to have to clash again, and that this time maybe you have to see, well, is there any hope to turn Vader against the Emperor? And it also has Han is in Carbonite somewhere. So you're like, well, what are they going to do about Han? So it's the perfect setup for the final film. But in this one, you've cut off the top half of your main antagonist, which I'm not mad about, but the problem is that there's no setup for the Emperor whatsoever in that film.
Yeah.
So when you start seeing the Emperor...
Which is why I feel like Palpatine being rumored or being told is...
At this point, I think it's all but confirmed.
Yeah, it's all confirmed. God damn it. There's nothing... Why does he need to be here?
So what's J.J. Abrams going to... Because I don't believe it when they say, oh, it was set up from the beginning. We knew we were going back to the... I'm like, I don't believe you.
Yeah,
like, I just don't believe you.
It just seems like they're like really hiding behind one more time. They're using the old trilogy to save their bacon.
So I'm like, well, how are you going to set this up? Like, you have to set up a new antagonist in the last film of your trilogy.
Right.
Well, hey, they did it with Thanos. They got it. I mean,
that's completely different.
At least he got peppered in. But like the last movie.
Well, no, that's not why it's different.
Because
Infinity War was essentially Thanos the movie.
Yeah.
Thanos was the main character in Infinity War, and everyone else was a side character, and that worked. Because you had already established the arcs for all of your other characters, and this one was just wrapping up how they come together to fight the final bad. Whereas you have Rey's arc is unfinished, so you have to finish your main character's arc whilst introducing a new bad guy, which is like, congratulations, have fun with your 2-hour and 40-minute film, because it's going to be that long now. Like, doing all of this, like, Infinity War was perfect because they had developed all of the other characters so well that they're like, okay, it's super important that our big final bad guy is a compelling character. Let's make it Thanos the movie, which was so smart.
Yeah.
Attack of the Clones is better than The Last Jedi. Confirmed.
Oh my god, get out of here.
Honestly, yeah.
out of here.
I think that The Mandalorian is all the more important right now because Star Wars just desperately needed a win.
Well, after Solo bombed, and then we had a year and a half.
I really
like
that movie.
And The Last Jedi.
I don't remember much of Solo.
Some people didn't like Rogue One, so it wasn't a complete hit.
Hated Rogue One.
Man, it's so interesting that you could be so different on all of these movies, but then we could be so similar on Mandalorian.
The next episode airs on Friday, and then there will be a week after that until the 3rd. Yep. So we'll see. I think that the release schedule is somewhat, it's not always a week, I think. It's like different days. So yeah, let me pull it up real quick. I think it's like a 10-episode first season.
Yeah. Well, and you said after 9 they were taking a break, right?
Hang on, let me see. I said after movie 9. After they're doing a break from films.
Okay. I got confused by that.
Let me see. Oh, is this it? Mandalorian was released. Yes, here we go. Okay. So we've got, yeah, so it's an, oh, it's an 8-episode first season.
Oh, wow.
So the first episode was today. Next one's the 15th. Then it's a week, a week, a week, a week. Oh, okay. After that, it's, oh, but then between episodes 6 and 7, it's 5 days, probably because of something to do with Christmas, maybe. And then it's 9 days after between yeah, 7 and 8.
Right. Holiday threw that one off.
Yeah. The holiday. So they, yeah. So the last episode will be on December 27th. So it'll go through the end of the year. Cool. So,
so let's transition to Rick and Morty, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Who wants to go first with Rick and Morty?
You had the strongest opinion on it. So I want you to kind of tell me what you thought, because I thought it was just another, it was a good first episode. I don't really have much more to say.
All right. So my thoughts are not extensive, but I think that's more damning than anything else, especially since the episode was essentially the same length as The Mandalorian, and I feel like we're going to talk about this for about 10 minutes.
Okay. It was like at least 10 minutes shorter, but okay.
I mean, it's what, like a 25, 30-minute episode, right?
No, Rick and Morty is like a 22-minute episode. Oh, 21.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, so it was a completely forgettable premiere, especially after being gone for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember that the previous premiere after a long hiatus was the Szechuan.
The Szechuan sauce.
No, the Szechuan
nuggets one from the Shonies.
That was really good episode.
That was a good episode.
Holy so God. This episode is like just thrown into the pile. Like it's not a terrible, it wasn't a terrible episode. It's just completely forgettable in every way. In the sense that, like, I watched this morning. I watched Rick and Morty, and I was not interrupted during Rick and Morty. Then I started watching The Mandalorian, and I was extensively interrupted through watching The Mandalorian, in which I had to pause it and come back and everything. So it took me about 3-ish hours, maybe a little longer than that, to watch The Mandalorian.
Okay. Jesus, I would be pissed.
I remember almost every detail of The Mandalorian. I have already forgotten most of Rick and Morty.
Jessica.
That's
and
Jessica.
I feel that the biggest problem is that, and this is not confirmed by me, it's just my gut feeling, is that Rick and Morty has gotten a lot of shit because of its fan base over the past couple years.
They're not the best.
And they aren't the best.
Let's pause real quick, really quick. Any fan base that gets sufficiently large is shit.
Rick and Morty's kind
Pokemon.
Of a...
Look at the Pokemon fan base right now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, everything that we talked about today has a shitty fan base. Pokemon has a shitty fan base. Rick and Morty has a shitty fan base. Star Wars has a DC, pick your fucking thing. If it's sufficiently large and sufficiently popular, the fan base is garbage. Continue.
Anyway, my point is that I feel that this season has been set up to be infinitely less edgy than all the other three seasons.
It's weird because I wouldn't even consider it to be that edgy though of a show.
Well, the show
if it weren't for those damn fans.
No, I don't. I disagree. No. I think the show is very cutting edge, like with what it does and the ideas that it does and the arcs for its characters and what it's what it's saying about the views of the universe. Like, it's very. I think it's pretty cool that the show has managed to avoid being considered super nihilistic, because it could it could fall into the trap of being super nihilistic, kind of like the movie we're going to talk about here in a couple minutes, but it always wraps back around to reinforcing a bond with humanity. So it walks a razor's edge.
It's more controversial though than I would have said edgy. Like, there's nothing, like, there doesn't, at least my definition.
Those are two words that mean the same thing, just with different picture frames.
I guess. It just doesn't seem so harsh in its controversy is my thing about it. Like, it doesn't seem like it's trying to be an asshole to you for doing these things. It's just trying to make light and being a joke about the whole ways that view the world.
I want to run this by Pat real quick, because yes, sure. Pat of all of us is probably, I'm a huge fan of Rick and Morty, but I think Pat is like almost fanatical. Yeah. I would say
he's one of those fans. Kill him.
Well, no, I would say one of my impressions of the show is, because I watched it late last night, and I remember thinking, And I don't know, it was kind of just one of those instinctual thoughts as I was watching it. And I want to know if you had the same thought. I was like, doesn't this feel like a step back, like with the character arcs?
Yep.
Because Morty, he took a huge step forward last season with his character development, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. He was more assertive. He was had a different view of the universe. He was closer in line to Rick's view, but it was different enough where he still valued his personal ties. Yeah. So that there was conflict. And he tried to humanize Rick, but then you have him in this one. It was like a season one story where he's like, oh, Jessica, I want to die with Jessica. I'm going to fuck everything up because I want to die with Jessica. And it's like, after seeing him almost take the reins in a lot of stuff last year, this felt like a step back for his character, which I was like, this is really jarring for me. You could take this episode and put it in season two and it would have fit, which I think is a problem.
And I think that is the biggest, you hit the nail on the head. That's the biggest problem. And I feel that it was especially poignant because I watched Rick and Morty last night too. It's just, it wasn't on Hulu yet, or at least when I was trying to watch it. So
yeah, I bought it.
Yeah, so
because I don't have Adult Swim, so yeah, I bought the episode and watched it.
Well, first episode, at least starting this morning, the first episode was completely free on AdultSwim.com.
Yep.
But anyway, so like I watched a lot of earlier season episodes, and I mean I watched a bunch of episodes. This probably isn't the best example of this, but like, you know, the episode where the badness of more Rick and Morty like gets sucked out of them.
Oh, that's a great episode.
And then
Wolf of Wall Street Morty.
Right.
Like American Psycho Morty.
Well, like, and then like Bad Rick, he creates that ray that covers the whole earth and
covers the whole world in toxicity, but he's actually the one who, like, Bad Rick is cares for because attachments are what he considers bad. That was a really good episode.
Right, it's a really good episode, and there's like so many episodes with Morty really good at the same caliber, but it's such an edgy episode too, because like it's not just talking about dual personality and developing characters specifically for Morty and like his insecurities and stuff, but like when the ray goes by, like they show the scenes in the church where like the pastor like changes to say, "Oh, God is not real," and they start butt fucking each other, you know, like. Like, it's just really, really edgy. And so then we have this morning's episode, season four, episode one, that I watched this morning. And like, it's not just that you could put it in any of the seasons. It's just, it's a filler episode. It's a filler episode that's in a premiere. And that's just not really how you do that.
Yeah. Like,
it's definitely a Rick and Morty episode. It's just one of those ones that I wouldn't watch again, you know?
It was fun. Well, and the thing is, there are very few of those, right? Like, Rick and Morty's done a really good job of where I would watch almost all of the episodes anytime. I can't point to one. Maybe there's, like, one or two in season one. Like, the lawnmower, Scary Terry, isn't really my favorite.
Oh, I actually enjoyed that. I like one. Scary Terry.
I didn't like it the first time I watched it. It was the second time that made me like it a little bit more.
The reason I didn't like it as much is because I felt that it was a little disjointed between the A and B plots, and it resolves the A plot about two-thirds of the way through and then completely transitions to the B plot, which I found a little jarring. But anyway, regardless, the point is that I think it was – I agree with everything you said, but it feels – there was not much to it, right? Like it was kind of bland, where Rick's story was, oh, there's this gag of him coming back over and over again in alternate universes where everybody's a fascist. And right. But there wasn't really anything to it. I was like, okay, that's kind of fine. But it was the visual of him, like, or the idea of him coming back to life over and over because his consciousness has been downloaded into a clone isn't jarring anymore, because the show has jarred us so much over the years. It's like, okay, that seems like a Rick thing to do. Sure.
It also wasn't clever.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. Well, that's the thing. It kind of did what Rick and Morty usually doesn't do, where it repeats the same gag over and over again without much else. I don't know. It just, yeah, it was fine. I don't know. Maybe we hold the show to a pretty high standard now because it's been so consistently good. But it felt, yeah, I was very down on the premiere, mostly just because I was down on what they did with Morty's character in it, where I was like, okay, is this like, I wonder if it was intentional, because if you make, if that's the problem with these shows, right? Especially with Rick and Morty, we just found out that they got renewed for like 70 episodes or whatever they, whatever deal Dan Harmon signed with Cartoon Network that's going to extend Rick and Morty forever. And the problem with the serialized TV show like this is that when it's like, okay, I have 70 episodes to continue this story where I've already developed this character to the point where can he, would he really still be continuing to do these adventures 70 episodes from now? Mm-hmm. So I wonder, was it an intentional effort to backtrack Morty's character to a sort of status quo a la every other sitcom formulaic show with a monster of the week, because they're like, well, we can't develop him too much because we need this show to go on for 70 more episodes.
Well, I mean, the redemption of at the end, though, for the show is that Morty ends up saying, taking charge and saying, like, no, Rick had nothing to do with this. This is all me, Mom. Like, leave Rick out of it. It was, like, the first time that I've heard him not only stand up to his parents, but also to take the blame for something, even though he could get in trouble for it. So
he did that a lot last season.
So. Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, okay, well, then maybe not the first time, but at least there is some last season Morty still there. It's not, yes, he made a stupid choice because he looked into his death and saw that he could potentially die with Jessica. But, like, I think that at the very least, it wasn't a total complete backtrack with him. It just felt like the adventure was kind of.
Well, and then
stupid.
He didn't go skinny dipping with her, and it was just like, what? And, like, I understand in the narrative, like, with him saying that he would go would not lead to them being together, but like it didn't make any sense. And then when he went off into the desert, he became the crazy being and
Kira.
Yeah, and like there was some like anime reference there that I did not get.
I didn't get it either.
I've never seen Akira, so I didn't get
I
it.
I tried
either.
To watch Akira. It's a really bad movie. It's very dated.
Can I just say the one part I really did love about the episode, the one gag, the one joke that I really enjoyed and I actually chuckled out loud to, was Rick saying that those crystals were essentially only good as like determining when it's okay to shoot at the enemy. Yeah. I thought that was hilarious. Where he's like, not definite certain death. Okay, bam. He shoots.
Yeah, like when they're reloading, yeah.
I was like, that's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, it's clever. And I feel like if they, and I guess this is my final point, is that I feel like if they flipped the episode on its head and started with the scene in the garage where they're arguing and Rick isolates Summer's voice and they talk about like Rick and she talks about Rick and Morty blowing each other,
which
and
was
like her ruining the season
that.
4 premiere. I feel like if they led with that and then had hijinks from there, it would have been a better episode, but
maybe, yeah.
I guess we'll see where it goes. I don't know. I'm still gonna watch it. It's still great.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it was still, the thing is, even a bad Rick and Morty episode is so much better than most everything else out there. So
yeah, way better than what else is on this list.
We're gonna be talking
Pokemon.
All right. So speaking of edginess and nihilism, let's talk a little bit about the one movie, Ian, The Joker.
Haven't seen it.
Okay. Do you
okay
care if we spoil it?
No, I
Patrick
don't
Patrick hates
care.
Batman. He doesn't care. Well, we can spoil all we want.
Batman ain't a superhero. Go for it.
He's got money.
Well, Batman isn't in this film. Bruce Wayne is in this film.
Money.
So I hate this film, not because of the film. The film was good. It was a good film. I hate this film because it pointed out to me how stupid everyone is, like human beings who watched this film or who didn't watch this film, but the media told them what they should think about this film. No, not Patrick. I'm talking very specifically about your soccer mom, suburban America.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's who I'm talking about, that I hate people. So about a week or two ago, my Susan told me that my mother-in-law went to go see Joker with her, with, you know, my father-in-law, and they went to go see it, and she said she almost walked out and she hated it because she said it was just she was like, well, with everything going on with mental health thing in this country, and like why would that's such a, it's such a disturbing film. I'm like, motherfucker, I've seen more disturbing shit than this. Like on my phone when I'm taking a dump. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
You're reading on your phone.
But
wow, that was an interesting analogy.
It's an interesting image.
But no, it's the thing. Like, people have watched so much of the Today Show or whatever, and where people with overly developed sensitivities have said, oh, the Joker is going to inspire spree shooters, and the Joker is going to inspire like people to go and Aurora shoot all over the fucking place or whatever. And like, blah, 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 blah. Like, you guys are fucking idiots. You guys are stupid fucks. And I hate you. And I hate that you're this dumb. And like, and yes, I am saying that my mother-in-law is a little dumb. And she would agree with me, but it's so to set the context here. The film leading up to its release, there was a lot of chatter about how it's supposed to that the film is it supports incel and it's supposedly sympathetic towards your typical incel male. And for anyone who doesn't know, incel is a term that means involuntarily celibate. And it's a group of people on the internet who like to say that the world has wronged them and women have wronged them because they deserve sex, but they don't get it because people are discriminatory against nerds.
They're nice guys.
Yes. Yeah. They like to say that we're the nice guys, but because we aren't attractive enough, women who we deserve to fuck will not fuck us. Like, it's the worst kind of internet troll people.
It's the kind of attitude and Richard. Like a it's the kind of attitude like a 13-year-old guy would have, but these people are like in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yes, that's a thing. Like, your super neckbeard lives in the basement. Like, it's the worst. But anyway, the movie, if anyone who actually has seen it, has nothing to do with incest. It's actually more about classism, so I don't know where
even
the fuck.
Then, people... I'm not sure if I can even say if it's about class.
If you want to make a, if you want to paint a broader theme,
yes,
like there is a theme, a little bit of anti 1%.
Yes,
a little bit in there. It's kind of a background tone to the
film. Or is it Ian? Or is it about that?
That's the thing. It doesn't really have anything to do with the main character, with the Joker. He doesn't give a fuck about that shit. And he says so in the film.
Multiple times.
He says he's not political. So I don't know where the hell these people came from thinking that this was a movie about incel.
A light spoiler, because the whole movie's probably going to be spoiled. And if you haven't seen it, then you probably didn't want to see it and whatever. But like
me,
his whole, like the scene where he kills a bunch of the Wall Street guys was all in self-defense. Like,
it started that way. And then he shot a guy crawling away from him. Like,
yeah, but you know what? I mean, I'm also... The guy was trying to beat his head in, and I don't... Like, I'll put a gray area in there. But, like, the guys basically were asking for it, is all I could say about the three. That they were not exactly innocent bystanders that were getting shot for the sake of being shot. So... Like, it's not like this is saying, like, go out and shoot up a movie theater or anything like that. This is
Go ahead, sorry.
Nor is this, like, really saying that he had it out for this specific class. It's just that these three Chad in suit guys were picking on him and then escalating it to a disturbing area. And then he pulled the gun out and shot them in self-defense. And then, yeah, he chased some guy up the stairs.
The big thing with this film that I would say... is why I don't have a problem with it at all, is the film never paints Arthur, the guy who turns into the Joker. It never paints him as a character to be sympathetic for, really.
Right.
Yep. It hints that there is, I would say it says, hey, here is his backstory. This plays a role into why he is the way he is. But I don't get the sense that the movie ever says, you should love this character. It's like, no, you should be disturbed by this character. The character, yes, there is stuff that happens in his past that you see where you can kind of understand why he is the way he is, but it never go. I don't think that I didn't get the sense that the movie ever said this is a good guy or this is a misunderstood guy. It says this is a guy like any other person who, when a certain confluence of circumstances happens and you get the right person in that position, could turn bad, and he turns bad, very bad. And I don't think it ever says that he's not bad. It doesn't. I didn't feel like it glorified him in any way.
No, I don't think so either. I don't. I felt like the entire thing, like the at worst, you can make the case that like he was pitiable. Like he had moments of like, you
could pity him. Yes.
Yeah. Like there was moments like, well, that's just really unfair. I'm so like, it sucks that that happened to this person. But like, I wouldn't say that at any point you think like, well, if I was in that situation, that would be my reaction too.
I would say the reason people probably hated this film, the soccer moms of the world didn't like this film, is because they're used to going, this is not shot like any comic book movie I've ever seen.
No.
Not even like The Dark Knight, which you could make the argument is like the grittiest, most realistic portrayal.
This is also portrayal. Not really shot like a lot of traditional movies either.
Shot like almost an indie movie.
Yeah, like my say. Dad probably wouldn't like this just because of the stylistic element of the movie, not so much the content.
It's a character study. Joaquin Phoenix is in every frame of he's in almost every frame of this film. That's to its credit because he does a fantastic job. Like he's a really good actor, which we already knew, but he does a really good job with this role. And the director knew it too because they hold on him a lot. But it's not shot like any other comic book film. And I think every sensitive Nelly who went out and saw this film and was like, oh, it's the Joker. It's going to be like Suicide Squad, or it's going to be like The Dark
Thank
Knight.
Thank God it's not like Suicide Squad.
It's going to be like The Dark Knight, and my kid will enjoy it. Like, no, this was a rated R, it was a rated R film, and it was an R for sure.
Yep.
And it was fucking dark. It was very dark, but I've seen darker. That's the thing. People don't like it because it has DC on it, that it has the Joker on it, recognizable character.
It's odd because, like, I think both sides were wrong in how they viewed this movie. I think that, like, the soccer moms and your mother-in-law, I think that, and Fox News or the Today Show, whatever, I think all of them were wrong in thinking that this is going to be, like, this dark, like, edgy glorification of edge and incel culture. And I think all the edgelords out there were wrong in thinking that it was going to be this, like, jack-off sense of, like, fighting the main man power and showing the world, like, oh, yeah, like, look how hard this is! Look how hard I am! Ah! And then they have to clean up the movie theater again. But, like, it wasn't any of those. It was much, 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 like, different in terms of, like, how this was going to be, like, portrayed and like how they ended up portraying the Joker himself, because my biggest fear was going to be that this is a character that shouldn't have a background story, because that was part of the appeal. It was that it was always a mystery, a chaotic mystery.
Right. The famous line where if I'm going to have a story, I'd prefer it to be multiple choice.
Yes.
I'm going to interrupt this conversation I don't care about with something that really, really strikes me close to the heart. I went to ESPN just to see what the headlines are, and there's a link to the ESPN shop, a sponsored link that is right up my alley, and it links to an eBay listing for authenticated, signed Daryl Strawberry 8x10. And the 8x10 is a picture of him crying in the Simpsons episode Homer at Bat.
That is the most Patrick targeted ad I've ever heard in my life.
I know. So I'm
wow,
gonna,
Big
I'm
Brother
link,
is watching. Jesus.
And Big Brother, it seems to actually know who you are and knows what best.
It's $40, and I think I really want to get it. I'm not an eBay person, but this I would put that in a frame.
Oh my god, that is fantastic. Is that actually signed by Daryl Strawberry?
Yeah, it's a signed and authenticated signature of Daryl Strawberry.
How's that only $40? That's fantastic.
I know.
If you do get it, post us the unboxing, because I want to see what this looks like. Oh, man.
My wife would kill me, because we're trying to save money right now.
Oh, she can't afford $40. Look at his face.
You really need to get that, Pat. Like, that's so you.
I do have a relevant bit to add about the joke.
If you don't get it, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
Oh, man.
Hit us with it. What is it?
All right, so about sensitivities, and this hit me really hard probably about a year ago, maybe. And just my overall thought process when I hear about the soccer moms being enraged about rando thing number two. There's a guy that I know, and I'm not going to give you any information about him because I do tell a few other stories about him. There's a guy that I know that he has kids. He has a couple kids, and we were talking just randomly about stuff, and he's like, "Hey, Patrick, can you believe what my son's teacher sent him home with, like what assignment he had?" And I was like, "No, what?" And he sends me this link to this picture about how, I guess, like it was a assignment about serial killers. I actually have the picture. It's a serial killer's research assignment. And there's like, the kid was supposed to look up a serial killer and then answer like 8 questions. Very generic kind of thing.
Sweet, there's a podcast for that called My Favorite Murder. Go check it out.
And he was legitimately upset about this. And I was like, oh, because he has a couple kids. I'm like, oh, is it one of your younger kids? And he says, no, it's like his kid's his 11th grade boy. Like the kid's like 17.
He's 17 years old. Jesus.
And he's getting like all up in arms about this and kind of upset and how he's like wants to call the school and all that. And I'm just like, well, back this train up here. Okay. Like I get that you might be kind of upset about this, but your 8-year-old son is like enamored with the show Criminal Minds. Like,
About serial killers.
Right, exactly. Like, not only do you let him watch Criminal Minds, like, every week when it comes on, but he dressed up as, like, the main character from Criminal Minds for Halloween.
What, he wear a suit?
I don't know. Like... Well, I think he did. I think it was, like, a suit and, like, a little FBI badge or whatever.
Oh, my God.
And so that's all I have to say about sensitivity. And, like, I'll tell you, it, like, really kind of shook me a little bit because it's just, like, these are the type of situations that are legitimately happening for all of these outrage things. Like, this isn't a mountain that soccer moms are dying on for the Joker movie or for like a serial killer research assignment, but they're making it sound like it is, you know?
Well, it's extremely infuriating. It's because it is hypocritical. Like it pisses me off so much more than anything else because
I'm mad that they're mad.
Well, no, it's like, and that's the thing. I never thought I'd be that person that's like super angry about how sensitive people are. But people, it's about the things people are sensitive over. In Endgame, had a scene in it where Thor cuts off a person's head.
Oh yeah, that's like, right.
He cuts Thanos's head off.
Spoilers for Patrick.
Thanos is on the ground doing like freaking incapacitated. Like completely helpless, and he just freaking murders him right in front of everybody, and right in front of all your 13-year-old kids in the audience. And this is a character that your kid will dress up as for Halloween, and who will, you know, oh, I love Thor, he's great. Like, your Thor's a fucking murderer. All right.
I just hope that there's a kid out there who dressed up as Thanos, and then that kid who's dressed up as Thor cut his head off.
But I'm like, that's the thing. The Joker, Arthur, in this movie, he shoots a people, but he doesn't cut anyone's head off. And like, that's the thing, because it was shot so realistically and it was shot like an indie film, a character study, very realistic, not shot like any comic book film ever. That's why people are all pissed off, because they wanted it to be The Dark Knight, where Batman comes in and punches the fuck out of him, like, not today, Joker. You can't harm anyone else with your wily, with your laughing gas. That's the thing. There was no scene where the Joker pumps laughing gas into the studio with the talk show host. No, he shot him in the eye. That's what he did. Right in the fucking face, like a human being would do. The Joker's not going to put CS gas in your vents to put or laughing gas in your fucking mouth to kill you.
I'm really enjoying how fired up Ian's getting about this.
I know, me too.
But no, it's infuriating.
Ian, you know what this reminds me of? It's like the expectation of... Okay, and so small spoilers for Patrick, and I apologize for this.
It's fine.
But like... the Venture Brother episode where Captain Sunshine comes in and drops the Monarch off into the
into the yard of the jail.
Yeah, into the jail, and the police officer's like, "Yeah, well, we had to let him go. It's due process." Like,
he's like, "Yes, he dropped me off right into the yard of the jail." Apparently, no one explained to him what due process. Like, that's the thing.
But that's the expectation people have of the Joker.
Because it was shot realistically, because like, hey, what if the Joker was like an actual person? Yeah, that's what he would be like, a fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
Like, how many people did the Joker blew up a hospital in The Dark Knight?
It was evacuated. We're good.
Mostly evacuated.
Mostly.
He freaking kills so many people in that movie. And this, how many people does the Joker kill in Joker? He kills the three Wall Street guys. He kills the one dude he worked with. And he kills the host of the show. He kills five people in this film.
One hand.
Like, with a gun. With a gun.
Probably the same amount of bullets. He probably never had to reload.
How many people did James Bond kill in the most recent Bond film with a gun?
They were terrorists.
Like, it's ridiculous. They signed up
for the sleeper cell.
I need to pop some popcorn.
So fucking sick of it. It's the hypocritical, freaking sensitive ass assholes out here. I hate it.
Ian, it's okay. We're all sensitive.
Oh, God.
Everyone's sensitivities.
Look, if you want to be offended by something, I have no problem with that whatsoever. Everyone has the right to be offended by whatever they want to be. But if you're going to be offended by one thing.
On this day, Ian became a Trump supporter.
No, Jesus Christ, no.
He became a boomer.
I'm just saying,
okay,
if you're going to be offended, you need to be offended by all of the things that are consistent with what you're offended by. Yeah. If you're offended by, hey, like my comic book movies shouldn't have wanton violence that could inspire sensitive youths into doing something bad. Like, okay, no one under the age of 17 can go see Joker without a parent. Like, but your kid went and saw Endgame and watched Thor cut the head off of the bad guy who was a prisoner.
Or one better, like all the parents that let their kids watch Game of Thrones and all those rape scenes.
Yeah, like what if the you're fuck, gonna, people? Yeah, that's the thing. But no one was upset over Sansa freaking half raped. Of. Well, no one, there were people who were, but like, most people would say, that's HBO. That's the thing. People love their violence and their rape. If it's in the box shut up. I'm not finished. People love their violence and their rape. If it's in the box, if it's in the box labeled violence and rape. So HBO is the box labeled violence and rape, so it's okay there. But if you put your violence and your rape in the DC box, that's not okay because that's not where it's supposed to go. Even though it's a rated R film, like Deadpool. All right, I think I'm done.
Deadpool doesn't rape though. Yet it's a difference.
That Deadpool took it up the ass in that film.
Oh my god!
There's I remember him shaking his head.
Your rape.
I remember him shaking his head in that film. All right, that's it. I'm done. I've made my point.
Oh my god! I don't have
anything else to say. You covered it all.
Oh my god.
So Joker, good movie, not great. Definitely see it.
Joker's a really good movie, but don't watch it with people who also watched it.
Go watch it just for Joaquin Phoenix's performance. It was great.
I actually have a little bit of a segue. I know we've been going really long, but...
Well, here, but one last thing. I just want to say the only other people that I've heard who didn't like it were people who don't like unreliable narrators, and the show does.
Oh, that was the best part.
Was the best part, and I think that was my favorite thing about the movie, but
there made are you some question people who just, a lot of it.
Yeah, so there are some people who don't like to have questions about the movie at the end, so... Anyway, go ahead, Pat, in your segue.
So, Brooke and I listen to audiobooks when we're in the truck together,
nice.
And especially since we've been going on long trips, we... listened this year we listened to all of the Harry Potter books together.
Adorable.
And we finished the last one I don't know, like a month ago. So we've been kind of searching for another book to listen to. And Brooke made me choose a genre, and then she would choose it from there. So I chose sci-fi / fantasy. And she looked up, she found this book called The Jade City. Have you guys ever heard of this?
Negative. I've not, no.
It's a...
Wait, Jade City, is that a reference to Wizard of Oz?
No. No, that's the Emerald City.
Oh, I was so close. All right, continue on.
So it's... Apparently it's... I can't remember who it's by, but it's the start of like a saga or a series of books, and it's about this like fictional Asian island nation, and they have... they mine jade, and jade has like magical powers for like certain groups of people, and they sell the jade to other nations that are also fictional, but thinly veiled fictional, like España, you know?
Right.
Anyway, it's kind of interesting, but the reason, and I'm enjoying it so far, the reason why I bring it up though is how uncomfortable I find sexual scenes in novels. Like, I don't know if this like...
Well, you didn't like riding down the road and having it described as like, he put his sweaty palms down my panties.
Right, right. That is literally what I am saying. Yes.
It's like, ew, don't, ew. Fuck you, right. Don't describe it like that.
Right. That's literally what I'm saying. And it wasn't like it was done in like a nasty way. And the scene that was... being described wasn't rape or anything like that. It was like a consensual sexual scene. I don't know. It was like
Was it mostly uncomfortable because there was another person there? I feel like I wouldn't mind it too much if I'm on my own. But I feel like if like me and Susan are like riding down the road, somebody's talking about how he's like finger banging his girlfriend, like that would probably, it would be a little off-putting.
This reminds me of like when I saw The Watchmen and my mom was with me and then that scene comes on, and I've never seen the movie before, so I had no idea that was in this movie.
Oh my god,
so...
the thing is that we all know the scene you're talking about.
Yes. With and the flamethrower. Like, well, this was not what I thought this was going to be.
Yeah, so like in a way I kind of get it. And yes, it might make me prude, but I can listen to thousands of hours of people beating the shit out of each other. But one scene of consensual sex, and I'm just like, this is kind of weird.
Mississippi really getting to you down there.
Mm-hmm.
You Bible thumper, you. Look at you.
Well, hey, it's what I do with my wife in my own home is not none of your business.
I would say it's weird because I think there are some fantasy authors that just shouldn't touch that area of like description because they're just not good with it, and it just sounds like almost too awkward and fanficky in a way. Right. And I feel like a lot of the R.A. Salvatore books that I have, he always tries to do something like that with it, and it's just like this wasn't necessary. So it's unfortunate that there is another one like that. Although this one is with a female, Fonda Lee.
Yeah.
Canada.
It's a 2017 gangster fantasy novel, Fonda Lee.
This sounds like the setup for the Goblin expansion for Hearthstone.
No.
With all the jade and the mafia.
No, but it is book one of the Greenbone saga.
Yeah, I saw those two other ones.
Which is a nice euphemism for what we're talking about right now. Greenbone.
Who's your green bone daddy? All right, guys, I think that's more than enough for today. So if anyone, once again, if anyone would like to email in, we will dedicate the entire episode to that email if you are the first. And that email address is leagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org. There's also a Twitter. It's @TheLOMGPodcast. There'll be a Discord link in the description below, so you can also go to our Discord and hang out with a bunch of esports nuts, and also us sometimes. There are Twitch streams every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 p.m. There's a Monday Level Up podcast on Twitch as well, so you can tune in and have some fun with that.
Cool.
And last but not least, we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/OTN, so check it out and support us and help us to improve whatever little bit we can.
And if you're thinking about donating to the Patreon, may I suggest that instead you should give your money to me. And you just email us at the email address What was the email address again, Ian, or Richard?
League of Mediocre Gentlemen at otnmedia.org.
And put in the subject line donation for Patrick. And and we'll connect you with it.
I think, or if you send every dollar donate to Overtime Network, I will I'll add a Patreon level for a $1 contribution to Patreon will earn you the right of me sending a copy of The Joker to any person in the world that you want to. So your 80-year-old grandmother. Your 80-year-old grandmother, I will send her a copy of the Joker film, and I will relabel it as Baby's Day Out, and she can put that in her DVD player, thinking she'll see some wholesome film and get to watch Joaquin Phoenix shoot a bunch of Wall Street guys in a subway.
I just want to say,
Ian, what if 100 people gave?
Yeah, I was to say, first off, it's only a dollar, and Ian spends $8 or more on a movie. And two, how long do you think it takes Grandma to figure out that this is not Baby's Day Out?
I don't know. That was kind of an interesting play right there. I think we should just cut this episode at Ian's loud rant about rape.
The key rule here is Ian will not send you a copy of The Joker. It has to be sent to another person.
right. I guess if he's smart about it, he'll buy The Joker once and then he'll rip it to like 100 DVDs.
I was about to say, I'm not buying 10 copies of The Joker.
Do people still rip DVDs and CDs these days?
Someone does, I'm sure.
Hey, you guys want my mixtape?
Yeah, I do. All right, guys, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for coming on. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and I will talk to you all next time. Have a mediocre rest of your day.